Ninth meeting of the Texas Commission on Fire Protection. Appreciate having so many people turn out for this meeting. Look forward to hearing from a lot of you. We'll get right into our agenda with the invocation. So for that, I would like to ask Chaplain Mark Akers from the Magnolia Fire Department to step forward. If there's anyone in the room that wishes not to participate, you may excuse yourself out to the hallway. Chaplain Akers.
Good morning. Yes, please stand. Thank you. Before I pray, I'd like to just going to give a quick moment of silence for two of our firefighters that have fallen here recently. That would be Paul Juline of the Austin Fire Department of a sudden illness. And also we will recognize Roger Dean of the Seguin Fire Department of COVID complications. So if we could at this time, let's just give a moment of silence. Shall we pray? Dear Heavenly Father, we give you praise and we say thank you. Thank you for this moment in time that you, God, have ordained for such a time as this. God, I pray for this body of men and women that you have placed here. Thousands of firefighters across our great state of Texas depend on this congressional body to aid in the protection of themselves as well as lives and property of Texas citizens. The many conversations and decisions that will be made today, God, I pray will positively affect myself along with every firefighter in this state, that through the professional standards that this commission upholds, that you, God, will see its fruition. Through pandemic, flood, tornado, or fire, we pray for the safety of our men and women firefighters. But God, we know that nothing catches you off guard. Because it's moments of good times and even tragedy, God, we can be thankful. And even we will forever give you praise. And Father, I pray that as we all leave here today to go back to our respective departments and homes, I pray for safe travels, that those here today will meet again to continue to lead us and to work hard to keep us safe. In the name of Jesus Christ, I pray. Amen. Amen.
Thank you, Chaplain Aker. Commissioner Sharma will now lead us in the pledge of the United States and our Texas flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Honor the Texas flag.
I pledge allegiance to thee, Texas.
Thank you. You may be seated. Commissioners, I'd like to ask, before we get into item two, if you will indulge me, please. I know we've had quite a bit of turnover on this body, and if any of the outgoing members are present, I know our outgoing presiding officer, Mr. Moore, is present. I'd like to give them just a few minutes to address the commissioners and the audience, please.
Mr. Chair, thanks. Thank you for giving me this opportunity. I just wanted to let everybody know how proud I am that I have served on this commission for, I don't know, I think 11 years. And, you know, I think that we did a lot of good things. We had a lot of challenges and we worked through those. I want to thank all the commissioners that came before me. The commissioners that during my time helped and supported me. I especially want to extend thanks to Commissioner Steve Tall and Commissioner J.P. Stillman, because y'all both kind of kept me out of trouble and kind of gave me some good direction. And then I'd also like to go ahead and thank all of the future commissioners that are going to be here. You know, we all serve terms and we serve out our terms, and then we have to have people come in and replace us. And I hope that we continue to have the good quality of people appointed to this commission that it's been known for. Another job that I have had is to serve as a representative of Texas on the State Training Directors Association. And I've had the opportunity to see a lot of systems in place that in other states on how they deal with firefighter safety and taking care of the community. You need to be proud of what Texas has. You know, we're quite a bit different than most of the other state associations. Be proud of what you're doing, proud of what you're going to do in the future, and make sure that we protect the Texas firefighters and the communities that they serve. The only other advice I would give is, commissioners, build relationships. I mean, relationships are important. I learned a lot in this job as far as the politics of the state. And if you want to get something accomplished, you need to have those relationships. So build those relationships. I know each of you are appointed to represent certain stakeholder groups or the community. That's important. It's been a great experience. I want to thank each and every one of you. And with that, I'm going to exit out into the audience.
Robert, thank you for those words. Before you do, I'd like for you to step to the center of the dais for a quick presentation.
Thank you for your service to the Texas Commission on Fire Protection. I hope you'll accept this from behalf of all the commissioners here. Enjoy your time away from here, and I know you're going to continue to do good things for the Texas Fire Service. Thank you for your service.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
That's your nameplate, please.
As Robert mentioned, we have had quite a bit of turnover at the commissioner level, and before we get into any more business and roll call, we need to introduce some of the new members of this commission. So I'm going to start over here to my left with Mr. Glenn, Commissioner Glenn.
Thank you.
Want to do a brief introduction, please, sir?
My name is Michael Glenn. I'm a Fort Worth firefighter. I've been with Fort Worth about 15 years. I'm also the proud president of the Professional Firefighters of Fort Worth, Local 440, and happy to be here. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Cote.
Good morning. My name is David Copney. I've been in the fire service for 36 years. I'm currently the agency director of TEEKS, Texas A&M Engineering Extension Service. And prior to that, my last job was the fire chief of the Dallas Fire Rescue Department.
Thank you. Commissioner Cantu.
Good morning. Chris Cantu. I never wore the uniform of a firefighter, but I did serve in the United States Air Force for 25 years. Retired as a colonel and live out in Round Rock.
Thank you. Commissioner Law.
Good morning. My name is Clyde Lowell. I'm serving as one of the public members here on this committee. I've been in the safety, health, environmental, fire protection for the last 39 years, and mainly in the energy sector, oil and gas primarily, and the electric utility as well.
Thank you. And Commissioner Smith.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Tim Smith. I'm the fire chief of West Carlisle Fire Department. Been there for 32 years. I currently serve as the president of the Lubbock County Firefighters Association, as well as the president of the State Firemen and Fire Marshal Association. Glad to be here. Thank you.
Good deal. Thank you. All right. We'll move on to item three, roll call. And since we don't have yet a secretary, I will do this one too. So we'll just go around the room. Commissioner Jones.
Here.
Commissioner Glenn.
Here.
Commissioner Morgan.
Here.
Commissioner Vandegrift.
Here.
Commissioner Wilson.
Here.
Commissioner Cotney.
Here.
Stillman's here. Commissioner Sharma.
Here.
Commissioner Cantu.
Here.
Commissioner Law.
Here.
Commissioner DeVillis.
Here.
Commissioner Hamilton.
Here.
And Commissioner Smith.
Here.
Thank you. Item number four, we got a little housekeeping to take care of. We need to go through the process of electing and selecting a new assistant presiding officer and secretary. I think normally in the past what's done are there are nominations received from the floor and then there's a vote of the body. So at this time, I'll entertain any notions or any nominations for a new assistant presiding officer.
I'd like to make a nomination.
All right.
Commissioner Jones for assistant presiding officer.
All right. Are there any other nominations? Any other nominations?
It's a highly sought after position. I don't.
Seeing none, then I will say by acclamation that Commissioner Jones is now appointed as the Assistant Presiding Officer.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I think.
Yeah. You can pick up on item five. So on the next position that we'll appoint is that of Secretary. So now I'll accept nominations from the floor for the position of Secretary.
I'll nominate Commissioner Morgan.
Oh, that's not fair.
That's a little tit for tat right there.
It is.
All right. Are there any other nominations for Secretary?
Come on now.
Any other nominations? All right. Seeing none, then I'll say that by acclamation that Commissioner Morgan will now serve in the role as Secretary.
Thank you.
So, Deb, do we need to do a vote, a body vote of that? Okay. All right. All right. All right. Moving on to item five. Commissioner Jones, it's yours to speak from here.
The commission meeting minutes of January 21st, 2021 and January 22nd, 2021.
All right, commissioners, I know you've had time to review these agendas.
It would be Commissioner Morgan, right?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, my bad.
You sure?
Trying to punish you.
We'll straighten it out on six then. All right, my bad. All right, commissioners, I know you've had your agenda packets for a while now and have had time to review these minutes. Are there any questions or concerns in the minutes the way that they're presented? If not, I'll entertain a motion.
So moved.
Second.
All right, I have a motion by Commissioner Jones, a second by Commissioner Wilson. Any other discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? Motion passes. All right, now, Commissioner Morgan, I'm sorry.
Item six, the Budget and Strategic Plan Subcommittee may meet on April 29th, 2021 during the commission meeting and provide a report relating to any recommendations developed by the subcommittee relating to the modification to the agency operating budget and strategic plan.
All right, commissioners, I know that we've not had this meeting in quite a while, and I know that we have a couple of positions to replace, actually three. Deb, in the past, how normally has this been done? Okay. The current members are Commissioner Morgan and Commissioner Sharma, and we need to select three additional to replace Commissioner Tull, Commissioner Doster, and myself. So any interest in serving on the Budget and Strategic Planning Committee?
I'd be more than interested.
All right. Commissioner Glenn?
I would too.
Commissioner Cantu? One more sleeper. Commissioner Hamilton? Okay.
Yes, sir.
Thank you all. Any action needed on that, Deb?
You just need to appoint a chair.
Okay. I would like to appoint Commissioner Morgan as the chair of that.
Sure. Happy to.
Thank you. Anything else need to be done on that one, Deb? Thank you. All right.
Item seven. Reports from fire service interest groups and agencies on matters relating to their specific organizational purposes, functions, activities, and objectives, including reports from the Texas Fire Chiefs Association, the Texas State Association of Firefighters, the State Firemen's and Fire Marshals Association of Texas, the Texas Fire Marshals Association, the Texas Association of Fire Educators, the Texas A&M Forest Service, the National Fire Protection Association, Texas State Association of Fire and Emergency Districts, Center for Public Safety Excellence, and the State Fire Marshal's Office.
Good deal. So would anybody like to come up and report from the Texas Fire Chiefs Association?
Morning, commissioners. Thank you. First off, congratulations to our new commissioners. I appreciate the service and thank you all for your willingness to do this. Secondly, I do, in the invocation, it was mentioned about the passing of Roger Dean and Seguin. For those of you that aren't aware, they are going to have a service, a line of duty service for Firefighter Dean Saturday morning at 11 o'clock at the Performing Arts Center at the Seguin High School. If you're interested in attending that, let me know and get you the information or get you in touch with Chief Skinner. The Texas Fire Chiefs Association has been doing a lot lately. We've got a lot of stuff going on. And had great attendance even throughout the COVID. We just had our executive conference. We had about 241 attendees for the conference. 35 people attended a separate peer support workshop, which was a partnership between the association and four local firefighters, Bryan, College Station, San Marcos, and Pearland, all participated in funding that effort. It was a really successful conference, 52 vendors, 96 attendees from the vendors as well. So we completely filled up and wound up overselling the hotel there at College Station and two additional hotels offsite. So that worked out well for us. We have 76 people registered for our upcoming Fire Chiefs Academy in Grapevine, which will be June the 6th through 11th. We've contracted with the Embassy Suites in Grapevine, the Embassy Suites in San Marcos for the next 8 offerings of that. So we have the dates set and the venues for the next 4 years of our Fire Chiefs Academy, and we're looking at having to probably cap registration in that very soon. 35 people registered already for the Fire Chiefs Academy, which will be in San Marcos, September 19th through the 24th of 21. And our membership is up almost 200 people to 711 from this time last year. So that concludes my report.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Texas State Association of Firefighters.
Morning, Commissioners. Congratulations to all my friends, old friends, and our new friends, hopefully. I'm Jim Reedy from the San Antonio Fire Department, but here today on behalf of the Texas State Association of Firefighters. Our firefighters continue to be at the Capitol, and we continue to work on bills that are favorable for firefighters and, of course, oppose bills that are not favorable for firefighters. You'll see firefighters all over the Capitol, in offices and in hearings, because our firefighters are very involved in what goes on in their well-being and safety. Our annual our biannual convention is coming up in July in Rockwall this year, and we are looking forward to it. Short and sweet. So.
Thank you. State Firemen and Fire Marshals Association.
Good morning, all. Good to see everybody. My congratulations as well to both the incoming and the outgoing commissioners. I'm Tim Rutland. I'm with the State Firefighters and Fire Marshals Association. Just a few quick items for y'all this morning. As Jim mentioned, our association, like many other organizations, is tracking a lot of bills that's currently going through the legislature. I think we're well north of 130 bills right now that are being tracked that have some degree of impact either on the Texas Fire or Texas Emergency Services, or more specifically the fire services. My compliments to J.P. Laney, our guy over there who keeps up with it all and is somehow able to and provides us with reports as to the status of bills. So it's a real interesting session this time. A lot going on over there in spite of all of the unique conditions that they have. So we'll continue to track those. The association is still on track at this point to institute an online testing program for its certification program. We have a committee right now validating test banks, and I'm hoping that we'll be able to conduct our first online exams this summer. My thanks to some of the staff here at TCFP for helping me with some contacts for some of the testing locations around the state. We're going to do much the same as TCFP, where we'll utilize primarily college testing centers around the state to offer the testing. So hopefully we'll be able to institute that and begin to transition into that type of testing this summer. It looks like we'll be able to. The only other item I wanted to mention, a big change for us as far as our conference goes. Our June conference, the venue that was scheduled in McAllen, has been canceled due to a number of concerns in that area down there. The board made the very, very difficult decision to cancel that venue. However, they also felt it was very important to conduct the business of the association this year. Our conference was completely canceled last year, so we now have officers that are serving in the same positions for 2 years. So that needs to be taken care of. We also have some very important constitution and bylaws amendments that have been presented, again, that have been tabled and sitting for over a year that need to be taken care of. So with that said, the board made the decision to establish a very abbreviated venue in Lubbock this year. It'll be basically during the same time frame, June 25th, 26th, and 27th. It'll consist of a couple of business meetings and a memorial service on Sunday morning, the 27th. So again, greatly shortened this year, but they felt like we really needed to take care of the business of the association so we could continue moving forward. With that said, although it is a shortened conference, we would love to have y'all with us. So I want to extend that invitation to each of you. You are welcome to come join us in those. It isn't all business. Friday evening, it'll begin Friday evening with a business session, but after that, we'll have a welcome reception with lots of good food and drink. It'll be followed Saturday by another business session, and then Saturday evening, we will have the president's reception, which is always a great time to come and just visit with people of the association in a very relaxed atmosphere. So again, there are lots of things happening that aren't just the business association situation. And of course, we have the memorial service Sunday morning. We'd love to have you there with us for that. So let me know if you think you might like to come. That way we can be looking for you. I can be looking for you and expecting you. We'd love to have you there with us. And I'm happy to answer any questions other than that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The Texas Fire Marshals Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Laurie Christensen, Harris County Fire Marshal. I'm here on behalf of the Texas Fire Marshals Association as a past president and current co-chair of the legislative group. As with everybody, we've had some struggles over the past year with COVID. We were not able to have our conference that we normally have in October, which is our best networking opportunity and preparation for the legislative session. But we did have a really good meeting at the Arson Conference that was held in Austin this past March. Our president right now is Ariana Kistner. Our first vice president is Omar Garza. Second vice president is Buddy Rice. I want to say that we're very involved with the legislative session this year. We've been asking for a lot of input. One of the things that came up at our March conference was there's some communication difficulties we're having with some of the city fire marshals, the ESD fire marshals, the county fire marshals, because we haven't gotten together. And so what we have on our website, which is texasfiremarshals.org, fire marshal with one L, texasfiremarshals.org, is we have a chat session on there. We have a chat button on there. And if you send us questions or information, what we're trying to do is use the technology to reach out a little bit more and make sure we're hearing from all of our members. We are really excited, though, that our 2021 conference is going to go on as scheduled. That is going to be held in San Marcos. That's November 2nd through the 5th at the Embassy Suites. Registration is open. We've had a great meeting putting together our conference schedule. We really think this is going to get back on track with us. But what we really want to do more than anything is membership. Whether you're a member or not, message us. Let us know how we can help you better, and then we obviously are always going to encourage our membership. But right now, we understand that with COVID, communication is key to ensure that we're continuing to communicate with our fire chiefs, our ESDs, our cities, and our commission. And I also want to thank Mike Wisco and some of the folks from SFFMA and the different groups. We had a great meeting. I know the Texas Fire Chiefs, we had a great meeting. It was, I believe, first of April, end of March. And I want to say that there was a lot of good communication. I feel like the working relationship with the commission and the Fire Marshals Association and the Fire Chiefs really appreciate that from the Texas Fire Marshals Association. We more than anything, we just want to make sure that communication stays open. Thank you, and I'm available for any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. The Texas Association of Fire Educators. Texas A&M Forest Service. The National Fire Protection Association.
She's on the phone. Let's give her a second to get.
All right.
Good morning. Mike, can you hear me?
We can hear you barely, but yeah.
Probably. Okay. Is this any better?
Yeah.
Okay. Good morning, everyone. And thank you so much for letting us participate in your commission meeting. I will tell you that I hope that I'll be able to join you in person in July, and I will look forward to meeting many of you for the first time, but also seeing many of my friends and colleagues that I haven't for a while. Just a few updates from NFPA. This is our 125th anniversary. And so we have unfortunately canceled our conference that would traditionally be in June, but we are doing a year-long 125th anniversary webinar series. And that is posted on our website. And we hope that you will look at the various tracks that are available. And if you're interested, sign up for that. Also, May is Electrical Safety Month, and I know many of you interface with either energy storage systems, electric vehicles, wiring in homes and such. And so I hope that you will leverage all the resources we have available related to electrical safety for the month of May. Also, if you haven't looked at our podcast, we have them on so many current events. They're always free. You can access them on our website or through any of the places that you use your podcast content. May 1st is Wildfire Prep Day, and many of your communities will be involved in that. Texas is a huge wildfire state, and we know that you are very aware of that, but those resources are online. And then also May 16th through 22nd is North American Home Fire Sprinkler Week. And with your Texas Fire Sprinkler Coalition, there are plenty of social media posts and things for each one of your departments to participate virtually. You can access that at the homefiresprinkler.org page, which is our partner, the Home Fire Sprinkler Coalition. Recently, Mike Wisco and I, for the commission, did a Facebook Live, and on that we talked about NFPA, the consolidation of the codes and standards, also how to join a committee, and about the new link platform, which will be a way for you to interface with the codes process. And so we're going to be doing a follow-up to talk about all the resources available through link and how to access that. And I hope that you will participate in it. Two legislative things that both the State Fire Marshal's Office, the Commission, and the Texas Fire Marshal Association are aware of. House Bill 1034 was introduced by Representative Goodwin. And in that, it asked that the ICC Wildland Urban Interface codes were included. NFPA did ask Representative Goodwin to include NFPA 1141 standards in that so that both code-making bodies were included in that process. We have not received any follow-up on that, but just as a courtesy, wanted to make sure you are aware of that. And then we also received an inquiry about PFAS related to firefighting from Texas. And as part of that, the question was what other states are considering legislation. Many of you know about both in gear and also foam firefighting. There has been lots of discussion about that nationally and at the state level, and so we'll continue to follow that. But with that, I'll turn it back over. I will provide an email follow-up so that if you need any of these links and information, that you'll have it in written format, sir.
Thank you. The Texas State Association of Fire and Emergency Services Districts, or Emergency Districts, sorry.
Good morning, commissioners and staff. My name is Cliff Avery. I'm the executive director of the State Association of Fire and Emergency Districts, or as we call ourselves, SAFE-D. As previous speakers have mentioned, we are monitoring a lot of bills at the legislature. This is a printout of all the bills that we are monitoring, and I'll now read that into the record. Just kidding. Mike turned almost as pale as his shirt there. We are here because there are more ESDs being created in the state. There will be more ESDs created in the state. There are several on the ballot on Saturday. Several people have reached out, and we're working with them for creation in November. More ESDs are hiring and bringing on career staff. And so as a result, we want to make sure that we are coordinating and assisting the commission in any way that we can to get the word out to our ESDs. Mr. Wisco has been very kind and generous with his time. He's met with our board of directors, which includes 11 commissioners from across the state. And he also was on one of our webcasts last fall to our membership talking about what the commission does, and that was a very successful webcast, and we appreciate his time. We are open and want to work with you all. Please feel free to contact me at www.safe-d.org. Our next meeting is in our conference is in the fall, September 16th through the 18th in Fort Worth. Love to have you there. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Center for Public Safety Excellence.
Good morning. My name is Leonard Chan, the current chair of the Texas Center for Public Safety Excellence Consortium. Congratulations to all the commissioners and everyone that has stayed on board. The consortium strives to develop a collaborative relationship among fire departments across the state to achieve excellence through continuous improvement, peer mentoring, and professional development. Participants range from civilian analysts like myself, administrative battalion chiefs, and fire chiefs from fire departments of all sizes across the state. Our annual meeting will be held in San Antonio on Monday, May 17th, ahead of the only training for agency accreditation held this year in Texas. The meeting will also be available online. The meeting will feature presentations on the economic value of the fire service by the American Association of Insurance Services, GIS and the fire service by ESRI, department spotlights on College Station and San Antonio fire departments, updates from the parent organization, Center for Public Safety Excellence, and Texas-only business, such as determining, hopefully, my replacement. There is no cost to participate. The accreditation training that follows, it will be from May 18th to 21st, and it's a $650 registration fee. There will be a late fee starting to be assessed after next week. This is a prerequisite for the peer assessor training. Two Texas fire departments are currently on the peer review stage, Houston Fire Department and College Station Fire Department. For those curious, hearings are broadcast online and are scheduled on the website for cpse.org. I'm willing to take any questions. Thank you all.
Thank you. In the State Fire Marshal's Office.
All right. Sorry. Not used to this yet. Item 8, report from Commission Representative of the Homeland Security Council.
Nothing to report.
Thank you.
Item 9, request from Curtis Dunn, Firefighter Cancer Support Network, regarding firefighter training program.
Good morning, Commissioners. Thanks for having me. We've come up with this, the Firefighter Cancer Support Network is an organization that's been around for about 15 years. It was Mike Dubron, a Los Angeles County firefighter paramedic, suffered colon rectal cancer and was given less than a year to live, stage 4, and he's now 15 years cancer free. So when he was going through his cancer, he said, I had lots of brothers, wanted to mow my yard, come answer my phone, but he said, I didn't have anybody that I could speak to about cancer. So he came up with the Firefighter Cancer Support Network, and we've been around about 15 years. My name is Curtis Dunn. I'm the vice president of everything west of the Mississippi River. I'm retired out of Arlington, Texas, 36 years. And I started helping Mike about 14 years ago. This last year, as everybody's already mentioned, the pandemic has put us come to a complete stop because the way we get our word out is we get our PowerPoint presentation, and we teach a class, takes about an hour and a half. So I came up to Mike and I told him, I said, what we need is we need something like a CE class and that's taught yearly that can be updated by the Firefighter Cancer Network. Right now it's available. We have a MOUs with the International Association of Fire Chiefs and TEKS. On their website, they have our PowerPoint presentation that their guys teach. Florida and New Hampshire have mandatory firefighter cancer awareness classes before graduating rookie school. In Arlington, the first class the Arlington firefighters rookies get is cancer awareness. Dallas has it at the end. I was talking to President Glenn. I'm not sure. I think Fort Worth does it sometime during their rookie class. So my idea is to get this through the commission to hopefully get this as a yearly CE for firefighters in Texas. It's about an hour and a half PowerPoint that we can reduce. I'm just going to kind of run through it here in just a little bit to give you guys a general idea of what we teach. And then if we do, then hopefully we can get you guys to a vote or what, however it goes, Mike, to get this on the committee to talk about it. So let's go through the PowerPoint real quick, then I'll answer questions real fast. Thank you. Again, as I said, my name is Curtis Dunn. I'm a third generation firefighter. My father was a fire chief in Leon Valley, Texas, after spending 28 years in the military in the fire service. My grandfather was a fireman here in Austin. So the class is broken into three parts: cancer statistic studies, the cause of exposure, and then changes needed. Just last night, I got phone calls from two firefighters in Texas that are suffering from cancer. I get about five a week is what I say we average in Texas. I know that Fort Worth has had a lot of firefighters. San Antonio, Houston seem to lead, and of course, they're the bigger fire departments. So heart attacks and cardiac arrest used to be cited. By the way, Chief Fites is going to step in and help me, son, from Grand Prairie. He and I have presented multiple times together. We also were at the Fire Chiefs Convention, and we had a roundtable discussion on cancer in the fire service. So heart attacks was number one for years. It was 45% of all the deaths or injuries were heart attacks. Now 63% of the injuries and deaths are firefighter cancer. You can see by far it outweighs heart attacks now. Cancer is a top cause of line of duty deaths in the fire service. It's the most dangerous, under-recognized disease in firefighters in the United States. How many people here are cancer survivors? I should add 1, 2, 3. It's I can't sit here and say that I know how it feels. I don't think skin cancer counts as a cancer that I need to worry about. However, what's known and unknown is that most researchers believe the cancer rates among firefighters would be even higher if it wasn't for the healthy work effect. You look around the fire stations nowadays, you don't see guys that, like me, that we didn't work out, we ate bad, we did things. So, but you look around now, there's mandatory physical fitness programs, there's physicals yearly. And we've had a lot of early detection since the Arlington Fire Department started their physicals 25 years ago. And early detection is the key to surviving cancer. There's studies, and again, I'm not going to go through all these. There's studies that can be done by anybody. It seems like these are the top six. So Florida professional firefighters did a study out of 34,000 males and 2,000 females. Between 72 and 99, there were 970 males and 52 females diagnosed with cancer, with thyroid cancer being the leader in Florida. They're significantly more likely to develop four types of cancer: testicular, 102% more likely, multi-myelomas, non-Hodgkin's, and prostate cancers. And again, this is available on our website if anybody would like to go over, or I have some thumb drives if anybody's interested. I'm just trying to get you guys back to your agenda. Possible increased likelihood of cancer risk: skin cancer, malignant melanomas, brain rectal cancer, stomach, colon, leukemia. You can see that the red is firefighters and the blue are the general public. So that's how much more apt you are to have cancer than the general public. 2,100 members were diagnosed with cancer and found increased risk. This is police officers and firefighters. Again, firefighters, 90% more likely to develop brain cancer than a police officer, down to Hodgkin's, colon, kidney, and bladder cancer. So the study is the first to report that excess malignant mesothelioma among U.S. firefighters. Everybody in the room knows what causes this. It's the asbestos that we deal with. And I guarantee in parts of every town that's represented here,
there's asbestos in some of the older homes that are built and the businesses are built that we deal with every day we walk in and treat. So firefighters are 129% more likely to get mesothelioma versus the general public. Cancer mortality rates among general population of firemen, you're 100% more likely to die from a mesothelioma than the general public. Down to rectal cancer, esophageal cancer, intestine, kidney, lung, and stomach. So conclusion, they found a previously unreported modest exposure for lung cancer and leukemia mortalities, finding as evidence of the casual association with cancer in firefighters. Some of these associations have been observed, potential exposure to polyacrylic aromatic hydrocarbons, asbestos, and shift work involving a disruption of your circadian rhythms. Since the trend in the fire service in some cities is going to a 48-96 versus the 24-48, which it's all in what you're used to and what you want. Your sleep patterns, if they're interrupted, your body's tired, you're more apt to have more accidents, but you're also, your resistance to things like cancer is up. So your resistance is you're going to develop cancer quicker by being tired all the time and working the 48. A lot of people feel like this hurts the firefighters. But again, I haven't talked to a guy that's on that shift yet that dislikes it. So there's plenty of time for rest and things like that. But again, those guys that stay up all night and go home, if they're tired, it just seems that the resistance to cancer is worse. So types of cancer exposures, your DNA, smoking, what you eat, drinking, and what's in the air. So these are the chemicals you're exposed to. The one I like to point out the most is benzene. Does everybody know where benzene comes from? Exhaust. And most fire stations still, to this day, don't have exhaust systems. They still have firefighters that are checking their equipment in the bays. So the exposure to benzene is one of the number one causes of cancer in the fire service. So there's absolutely no correlation between the levels found from air monitoring of CO or HCSN and cancer-causing toxins found at a fire. So again, food on the stove. Exhaust, fires with no air pack, food on the stove. We used to just walk in with our gloves, go grab the pan and take it back out. Now we encourage someone to fully gear up, put some gloves on and get that out. Ventilate the room before you go in without an air pack on. Exhaust, again, it's the number one thing, guys, in the fire service right now. And nothing upsets me more to walk into a fire station with a flammable vent system and see it dangling next to the exhaust. There's people that would kill for an exhaust system in their fire stations, and those that have it don't always use them. Car fires, everything's in a car that is bad. You see these guys have air packs on but aren't wearing their mask. So my next one is my award winner, though. Masked out, air pack on, and his regulator's hanging down at his waist. Guys, we don't know what's in dumpster fires. Food, chemicals, drug paraphernalia, things like that that we're dealing with. We're also finding that there are some cancer-causing agents in brush fires. So here's what causes cancer. There's your carcinogen and what cancer it causes. So you see benzene, multiple myeloma, and non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. So soot contains polyacrylic aromatic hydrocarbons. And when you sweat, your pores open up and you absorb more. The layman people think that most firefighters should get lung cancer, things like that, because of inhaling. Our issues are more absorption, the absorption of the carcinogens into your body. So your groin angle absorbs 300% of the carcinogens. Your groin, your jaw angle. Only 93%, but what's the first thing most firefighters do with their mask when they pull them off their head, their Nomex hood? They go around their throat. Well, your Nomex hood, your gloves, and your bucket, your off gas up to 8 hours after a fire. So there's recommendations we have later on. And again, it's, we're trying to stress that get your gear off as fast as you can. We recommend, and not everybody can do it because not everybody has two sets of gear, but bagging your gear up to get it back to the fire station where you can clean it. So the IFF did a fluorescent aerosol screening test. You see this young man before, then he's fully bunkered. This is afterwards. This is fully bunkered, mask, Nomex hood, and gloves. And this is what's absorbed into his body just in the short time in the aerosol testing. So for every 5 degrees, your skin temperature goes up. There's up to a 400% increase in your absorption rates in your body. So what changes can we make? No smoking, no chewing, eat better, sunscreen, exercise, and moderate your drinking. I don't think there's a fire department that I've talked to or presented. And I presented to, I look around the room, I presented to a lot of fire departments this class. I go out, I teach it in 3 days. We're there for 3 days, so we get all three shifts. And this is something that we present to any fire department that wants it for no cost. So if you want, anybody's interested, get my card before you leave, give me a holler, and I'd love to give you the card and get out and get your guys trained. So it's pretty simple. If you smoke, you're buying yourself a trip to the cancer ward. Dr. Michael Hamrock is a Boston firefighter, now a physician for the Boston Fire Department. And so he's got a physical. We've got a physical form that he recommends all firefighters get in addition to their regular screening. The American Cancer Society recommends limiting alcohol intake to no more than 2 drinks a day for men and 1 for women. Always get that hand up. Can I save until the weekend? So seems like that's a fireman's answer. Sunscreen when you're out in the sun, if you're doing, you feel the boot, if you're doing training outside, you're standing on a freeway waiting for a wrecker and things like that, guys, use sunscreen. That's what we're trying to push so that skin cancer is a thing in the past with us. Nutrition, eat food, not too much, mostly plants. That's, firemen really love that one. So I'm told that there's hamburgers that are made out of vegetables. It tastes like hamburger, but I haven't tried, probably not on my, not in my, wheelhouse. So exercise. Guys, in Arlington, Texas, and that's the only one I can speak of. I know Fort Worth has a great physical. We get, in Arlington, we got from 8 a.m. to 9:30 to do physical fitness. That was our time. Of course, if you had CEs or things that morning, you could always do it in the afternoon. So there's no, but you are given an hour and a half a day to exercise. And it helps. It keeps you healthy, and it keeps your resistance to colds and things up. So what immediate action can you take to protect yourself? Use your SCBA from initial attack until you walk back out and get on that fire truck. Nothing, and guys, I understand, these air packs, they hurt your back, they hurt your shoulders, but as the old saying goes, back when we had horses and they drove the fire trucks, we wore steel tanks, and they were heavy. So the new tanks nowadays are a blessing, but wear your air pack, and always, if you're in the hot zone for overhaul or anything, and there, I think most departments now have a policy for cancer initiatives. I know we have some. Don't do gross field decon. Everybody thinks that the coup de grace, and Chief, you guys have two sets of bunker gear. That's a great thing. But you know what? I can give you 10 sets of bunker gear. If you don't do the little things, the small things like take a shower, clean yourself before you leave the scene, do decon, but that 10 sets of bunkers is not going to help you. You need to do the little things as well as change your gear out. Change your clothes and wash them immediately after a fire. Shower after a fire. Clean your PPE, your gloves, your hood, your helmet immediately. Don't take contaminated clothes or PPE home. I can't tell you how many times I did. I throw in the trunk if I had to go to another fire station or I got overtime. I left it in there. Well, if you had a fire, guys, it's off-gassing in the trunk of your car, which off-gas is going to eventually off-gas into the passenger compartment of your car. So decon your fire apparatus, interior, after the fires. People clean the outside, but do they even think about cleaning the inside? It's very important that you clean the inside of that rig as well because of the carcinogens that come off your bunkers when you're on the way back. Stop using tobacco products and use sunscreen. I use this as an example. There's I laugh because Chicago is probably one of the top departments in the nation for cancer diagnosis. And this is a shot of them them overhauling. Arson investigators, fire investigators, we still preach to gear up, wear a respirator at least while you're in there sort through the soot stuff, because those things are coming up and you're breathing them in as soon as you start overhauling it and trying to find the cause. Safe hot zones. Anybody's department doing the stations? They're hot, cold. I think a lot of them do. This is what they're recommending is the apparatus bay, shops, mechanic room equipment is all the red zone. Then the yellow is the gear rooms and things like that. That just kind of, but then the green is shouldn't be any carcinogens at all in that part of the station, your bedroom, your day room, your kitchen. I can't tell you how many fire stations I've seen, still see, where the door opens into the bay, into your kitchen, where your food is, your tea is, and things like that. The other door opens into your bedroom. So we're encouraging people to look at these station designs and try to, when you build new stations, try to do this. So carcinogen human, based on evidence, it's likely to increase risk of lung cancer. Exhaust source capture is the most reliable means to reduce and eliminate that problem. But if you don't have the diesel exhaust systems, at least keep your doors open once you pull in and pull out of that engine or truck. So NFPA 1500, fire department shall prevent exposure to firefighters, contamination of living quarters and areas with exhaust emissions. That's a recommendation, it's not a law. So a lot of stations are still being built with the emissions. Here's some exhaust, just to show the exhaust not being used, things like that. See where the bunker gear is hanging, where the exhaust blows on them as they leave the station. Again, perform field decon as soon as you can to remove as much soot particulate as possible. Shows you a proper way of taking gloves off. This guy on the left's got some EMS gloves on, helping the other guy take his gloves off. How many times, Chief, when we were younger, we see guys stick a finger in his mouth with his gloves and pull it off with his teeth to get into his hand out of it. So, cross-contamination from taking your Nomex hood off. Again, healthy and healthy out. Is anybody familiar with healthy and healthy out of the Washington State Firefighters Association? They have a video. And this is a warm water wash system. Says fire mechanics took a 3/8 inch line off the heat exchanger, ran it out to the pump panel. In 2 minutes, they had a 5 gallon bucket of 98 degree water. So for $70 in parts and a couple hours labor, every fire engine could be equipped with a warm water wash station. Again, avoid contaminating your apparatus cap. Bag your gear on the way back to the station until you get back so you can open it up and clean it there. At least you're not getting the carcinogens from your gear into your apparatus. And I always get the question, well, what if we have a fire on the way back? Well, what if you have a fire on the way back and you're going to still at your feet, your gear, you're going to have to stop, put it on, or pull up. So we recommend not using black trash bag. We recommend something see-through because there are several departments that do this and have lost bunker gear to the trash. We're not gonna watch this whole video. This is the Healthy In, Healthy Out video. It's available online. If you just Google Healthy In, Healthy Out, you can see this video. So Dr. Stuart Baxter, for his recent studies, have begun providing that oil-based chemicals can produce more dangerous carcinogens easily absorbed through the skin. You should meticulously wash your entire body after a fire. And I find it hard to believe that I have to tell grown men in this class that, hey, you need to take a shower after a fire. And I think back in my younger days, we came back in off the fire truck, first thing we did is go sit in the recliners, take a break, then go clean stuff up, and then go take a shower, put a clean uniform on, and then go back and sit in that dirty recliner. The city fire department's using the clean cab concept yet? Very nice. You know, I tell the guys, those clean cab concepts are great, but they're only as good as you are, because first time you stick dirty bunker gear back in it, or you wear your percentage of fuel gear back in the cab, it's no longer a clean cab. Shower within the hour. Again, how many fire departments have gear washing? We recommend after every fire, you wash your gear. So, safety habits, the exhaust systems, clean cabs, the air packs are on the outside of the truck. No fire gear beyond this point. We try to encourage not taking gear into the fire station. This is another video done by
Super Visible Power that's used actually for theft detection and cash.
So this is the states that have presumptive laws. The red states have presumptive, although watered down they might be. We encourage it to do toxic exposure forms after every fire. And again, perform monthly testicular exams for men and breast exams for women to get an annual physical. This is Dr. Hamrock's recommendation for Boston firefighters. Is everything above is for cancer. The other should be pretty much a physical for everybody. The IFF, I chiefs now recommend colonoscopies for firefighters over 40, not 60 or 50 anymore. So changes. Going to take a change in from the top up and from the bottom up. It works both ways. You can only encourage them, but you can't force feed them. So discover cancer is the most of the time. How to talk to your fire. We talked about how to talk to your firefighters. Again, I'm trying to get through this so you guys can be on your business. This is about an hour and a half class usually. Mike Brown, Los Angeles County firefighter, cancer survivor. So what happens when one of your firefighters notifies us that he has cancer? We get a toolbox. The toolboxes are about this big. They come in the mail. They have places to store anything pertaining to your cancer. They have a book. Mike's got the book for anybody who wants to look at it. It's a survivor's guide. A very good book to talk about. How do you do your FMLA? How do you talk to your kids about it? Anything that pertains to cancer is in that box for you. So we also have badge support. We have 140 firefighters around the United States that are mentors. They've had cancer. They've survived cancer. Now they're there for you to talk with. We do awareness and prevention. We're at every convention. We were honored to speak when we had our roundtable with Chief Fights and I. We spoke at the Chief's meeting in San Antonio. And we have booths that we set up. So people, we're going to be at FDIC. We're going to be at Firehouse. We're scheduled to sign an MOU with the IAFF in September. If we do, then we'll be able to set up an all IAFF meetings. Guys, the choice you make in this career affects you and your family. I said, doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. I always tend to go more to the firefighter say. Well, that's the way we've always done it. And that mentality's got to change in the fire service. Want to let this one run, or you got 8 minutes? It's an 8-minute video, guys. If anybody want to, I'd like you to see this one done by the Boston firefighters.
As the situation takes place, the Boston firefighters are first. Get there, and we do our job, we do it well. Somebody's trapped in that building with all that smoke and fire over there, you know, we're trained to save lives.
Yeah, I'm going to be out here. Guys,
to get the people out.
This is on our website as well.
Cancer is taking the job, I love it.
It's a video done by the Boston firefighters talking about their exposure, and they have a wall in their fire administration for everyone that's passed with cancer. Again, my name's Curtis Dunn. My phone number's on my business card. You guys all have one I put on your desk. I'll answer any questions. Chief Vice to add something, but any questions for me, guys?
Let me help Curtis wrap it up so you guys get to your agenda. We taught this at the Texas Fire Chiefs Executive Conference just last month. And I think 200 some odd attendees came through the cancer education. And believe it or not, over a dozen had contacted me afterward wanting information because their department was doing nothing. So I know, you know, Chief Wisco, you guys did that great video. Many of us have been going to cancer symposiums since 2016, trying to educate ourselves. I will tell you the latest NIOSH numbers, 20% of our retirees will be dead in 10 years of cancer. That means every fifth chair in this room, if we don't make changes, will be dead from cancer, period. So we really need cancer education to be mandated, not only in our rookie schools, but now to our veteran firefighters. We did the life safety initiatives. We've done Courage to Be Safe. We're doing traffic safety. Why not add the cancer as part of that? That's it.
I'll be around for just a little bit if anybody in the audience needs a card or anything like that.
Waiting for your blessing, sir.
Oh, what now?
For his blessing?
Oh, so commissioners, on behalf of the firefighters, the State Firefighters Association, we'd sure like to see this as a mandatory CE, especially with all this, the figures you've seen, the facts you've seen. But we also really need to get to our younger firefighters. The culture is what it is for our older guys, but we need to get to our younger firefighters. And the way to do that is through mandatory CE and down the line, making it part of the basic firefighter certification. I've been at this a long time too. I've spoken to some of you chiefs. I've given classes in some of these places. My department has clean cab. My department has cleaning after every fire, and it still doesn't happen all the time. It's a matter of repetition, like everything firefighters learn in the fire service, repetition. CE, mandatory CE, for this kind of canned class is so important to us with the numbers that we have right now. So I would encourage it to push it forward through advisory and curriculum and testing to formulate a mandatory CE. Thank you.
So, Mr. Chair, since I'm new, I'll ask the question. Can we open this up to discussion, or what's
sure.
The...
If there's no other comments from the floor. Wait, Dan.
Danny Kistner, Fire Chief, McKinney Fire Department. I'm also a life safety advocate for the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation since 2007. And I, for one, would wholeheartedly support using this as a mandatory CE. Cancer, firefighter occupational cancer, although we've only been paying attention to it in earnest within the last 15, 20 years, maybe. We've known about it since the early 80s, and we've just kind of turned a blind eye to it. So if not now, when? And I 100% wholeheartedly support that initiative.
Good morning. Sam Graff, Chief of Plano Fire Rescue. I want to echo the sentiments. I think you have to do repetition. I think making it mandatory CE and living it is going to be the best way to actually get it through to our firefighters to change their habits for those that already have not. So I fully support it. Thank you.
Stephen, San Marcos Fire Department. I agree with Chief Greif's sentiments. I think this belongs two different places. It belongs as part of our initial training and the curriculum to become certified in the state of Texas, as well as part of the required annual CE for our members until we see a downward trend. And I think it's coming. I think the bell curve will eventually show up and the effects of the exhaust removal systems, the second sets of gear, a lot of the stuff we're doing will eventually show up. But I think until we see that and we're confident that it's sustainable, I'd like to see this in both an initial training and an ongoing training curriculum. Thank you.
Good
Morning, Commissioners. Fire Chief Mark Pound, Frisco Fire Department. Again, echo the sentiments of my colleagues and the folks that have spoken here. I do agree it needs to be a mandatory training, and I also agree it needs to be in the beginning. As you've heard, it is a cultural shift in the fire service, and the best way to shift the culture is to give this training to the firefighters at the beginning when they start the fire service and get that ingrained so it's a fabric of their lives and something they think about throughout their career. So I appreciate your support. Thank you.
Okay. Any other comments? Okay. Bob, let's go ahead and move to item 10 and open it because I believe it's going to dovetail right into this.
Very apropos. Item number 10, report from the Health and Wellness Ad Hoc Committee.
Thank you. Well, first of all, congratulations to everyone. New faces, congratulations as well. Old faces as well, and everyone that's made it here. It's always a pleasure working with everyone who's supported and your dedication to this profession. So to update you that don't know that the Health and Wellness Ad Hoc Committee was formed with the goal of educating all, including commissioners, on health and wellness and the top injury reporting recommendations. So we've focused on cancer prevention, mental health, cardiovascular, and injury reporting. And we have created a cancer prevention video, which is up on the Texas Commission webpage under the Health and Wellness Committee page, and it's there to view as well. And we are still working on a mental health course, and it's a CE for certification. It's in the discussions with the curriculum and testing committee. That's in the works at this time as well, with a few others from the committee. At this time, we have a recommendation, and it's dealing with having exactly what, you know, Curtis Dunn has just spoken about. So I think everything dovetails together. It's have a mandatory 2-hour CE requirement as part of the annual 20 hours per year to focus on these top injuries. And it includes reviewing the top injury report each year and focusing on the top injuries. And at this time, the top injuries include cancer reporting and prevention. It also includes strains and sprains and reducing weightlifting injuries and reducing fire ground injuries. So of the 2 hours, we are making the recommendation from our committee to have that each person from top down or bottom up review the top injuries, focusing on those top injuries. And we initially wanted to have video submissions from all departments to show collaboration of every city, every department. We were able to produce one video on cancer prevention, and it's from Houston Fire, the Union, McKinney Fire, Sugarland Fire, Portland Fire. We've had a collaboration. Whatever videos we could get, that's what we're able to produce, and it's on the webpage, and that it would be considered a video that you can include in part of that 2 hours because it's based off of the top injury. And we could not get any other videos, but any similar video, such as what you just saw, that's also any video that's NFPA approved or what you have in your industry right now pertaining to these top injuries is another alternative to use form those 2 hours of the 20-hour annual CE. And it's something that is coming to my attention as a public member is very needed. And hearing from everyone else, it's something that everyone unanimously supported. So I think it's important as a public member that this is an initiative that we continue to work on and we evolve. So first, I want to open up to discussion between all of the commissioners and any member here.
Thank you, yeah. Mr. Chairman. Commissioner? Mr. Chairman, so I agree that this is very important. We suffered our first cancer in the department just a few months ago. And I can tell you that one of the first calls I made was to Curtis and the Firefighter Cancer Network. And what we witnessed with him was that our guy said that the box that he received was the best thing he had received. I do think it's important, as the chiefs have said and the association has said, to start at the bottom when these guys are going to rookie school and girls and, you know, move it through their career. So I would like to entertain that we start that official process to make that and send this down to Firefighter Advisory and get some comments and send it back up. Because I do, just seeing it firsthand in the last month that we had to deal with it, it was nice to know that you can make that phone call. But then, like I said, we do it for traffic now, safety, and, you know, we're looking at making that. We've had Courage to Be Safe. And I think if we can start it, and that's how we start changing the culture, is we started on day one in rookie school, and then it's a continuation throughout their career. So that would be my recommendation, that we move this to the Firefighter Advisory Committee and start that process.
Thank you. Any other commissioner?
I'd like to speak. So were you only looking at this continuing education, the 2 hours of continuing education per year as part of the 20 hour, or were you also looking at the initial education for the training kit?
So we discussed that as well, training for certification versus the safety. There is a push for certification as well, clearly from the last moment. At this time, we are proposing only the CE for part of the annual requirement. Due to issues with grandfathering in, that is a consideration that we need to discuss, but it's open to all of us as commissioners. If that's something we want to do, we can consider that
too. I would recommend that we certainly do the 2 hours of CE, go to the advisory board, but I would also recommend that it be part of the initial training for all firefighters in the state of Texas. That way you're catching both those who are grandfathered in, anyone new coming into the industry. I also recommend that it would be good to be considered for the longer academies to have an introductory piece to it at the beginning of the fire training school, so they can understand the risk and hazards. And an exit one when they're coming out of the academy that provides them more information related specifically to how to maintain long-term health and awareness of cancer and other injuries that result in death of firefighters. So if that can be taken up by the advisory committee, I'll be supportive of that.
Mr. Glenn?
I would agree. As the president of the Fort Worth Firefighters, as I said earlier, I had the good fortune this week to get a phone call from one of our widows that we got some good news. And the good news was that our cancer claim for engineer Steve Collins had been accepted by the employee's retirement system. And I say that's good news because now his family is going to get the much needed and the much anticipated and the earned benefits that he sacrificed as a firefighter with Fort Worth Fire Department. And again, I say it's good news, but it's the most unfortunate of good news, because could we have prevented that early on? You know, Steve was a 24-year firefighter with Fort Worth. He'd worked for Halton City prior to that. He was pushing a 30-year career, and all the exposures he had had, had he not developed brain cancer, possibly had he been able to avoid it through education, prevention, and the measures that we know that we can take today, maybe we wouldn't have gotten the good news that we would have gotten, that we received this past week. The good news would have been he'd be with his family this next week. He'd be throwing a football with his son who's preparing to go to college. He'd be at home with his wife on his days off. It really is. You look at it, it's not just the firefighters and their safety on the job now. God forbid someone does end up getting cancer, because it can still happen. But we really need to do all that we can. And I appreciate what Commissioner Coatney just offered up, because I really do believe, and it's when you look at the training, it's a very valid point. Let's catch them early in the training, but let's also catch them before they get out the field for those of us that have 6 or 8 month academies, because we want them to be safe while they're going through training and they're exposed to carcinogens as a rookie, as a recruit. But then as a reminder, and also the transition out into the field, This is truly one of those labor management initiatives that we're all on the same page on, whether it be the fire chiefs or the unions. We're all together on this one. We should be lockstep. I completely agree with it, and I appreciate the time to be able to kind of give my feedback or my perspective that we've experienced just this week.
Commissioner Wilson?
I would just like to echo my sentiments as well. I think that it would be great to have it as part of CE, but also I think the first critical big step is awareness. We have to create the awareness early. And so with that, I would like to see it also as part of the certification.
Any other commissioner? And I'll just add my piece to this. Our department, you know, we're a mid-sized department, 179 total staff, 169 uniform. And then within about the last year and a half, we've also experienced three cancer-related illnesses in the department. So it is a growing impact. I've had the opportunity to sit through both Curtis and Robert's presentations at different times. I want to thank you guys for your passion on this. It's making an impact. Obviously, Robert, from your last visit at the Texas Fire Chiefs Executive Conference, you know, having 11 different chiefs reach out to you, I mean, that's saying something. The thing that troubles me a little bit, and it's not so much troublesome, but I always like to think of the Texas Fire Service as kind of leading the charge when new things are on the horizon. And it looks like there's a couple of other states that are a little bit further down the road on this than this. So I certainly think it's time to start taking some more incremental steps to improving what we've got kind of in the pipeline right now. So I would also be supportive of whatever that next step would be. So I'm going to direct ask staff. The normal process now would be to put it before advisory and have them begin to look at language.
Yes, and I'd recommend that we send it at the same time. We send it to the firefighter advisory and the curriculum and testing, because we can't alter the NFPA professional standards for the basic firefighter, but Destiny curriculum can take a look at it, figure out how to fit that in so that, just like the other programs that we've mandated in the past, we can make this part of the academy from the beginning. So I think if you let both committees start looking at it together, they'll collaborate on it, and I think they'll be able to bring something back to you with a plan for how we can do this sooner rather than later.
Okay. Sound good to everybody? Is it really no action to take? I mean,
we'll just take care of it. We'll make sure both committees have it on their next agendas, and we'll start discussing it.
Okay. And before we move on for this subject, I'd also like to thank all the other chiefs in the room that stepped up and spoke toward this today. It certainly makes an impact on us hearing from you. So thank you all for being here and adding your comments to this. I appreciate that. Anything else on this before we move on?
Item 11, subjects for future commission meeting agendas.
If I could, I'd like to offer a agenda item for the next meeting.
Go ahead. We can barely hear you, but go ahead.
Okay, I would ask the commissioners to review, discuss, and potentially modify the certification and testing rules for basic structure fire protection personnel.
I don't know that I heard all of that, and I'm not sure who's
online. He's asking that we constantly are review and try to update the basic firefighter certification stuff.
Yeah. Who's speaking?
I didn't hear that.
Okay, Woody Dunsey.
Okay. Chief Kistner.
Commissioners, once again, Danny Kistner, Fire Chief, City of McKinney Fire Department. A little over a year ago, I guess, I came before you asking you to consider as an agenda item making a mandatory requirement for reporting a Mayday or conducting an after-action review in its simplest form following any firefighter serious injury or Mayday. Since that time, I've had communications with Director Wisco. Thank you for your response on that, by the way, who said that reported that TCFP has a rule for 435.11 incident management system, which mandates departments meet the requirements of the applicable sections of NFPA 1561. And in 1561, it does have a requirement for incident safety officer to prepare a written post-incident analysis on just such events. So I would like Commissioner Spielman, from your words just a moment ago, Texas leading the way, I would like to recommend as a possible future agenda item that we talk about mandatory reporting for firefighter Mayday. and consider possibly including it in the injury prevention report on the backside of maybe a post-traumatic stress. Mayday, in its most basic form, is a life-threatening or a perceived life-threatening event that may have mental impact on a firefighter. And so I would recommend that it is a mandatory reportable event for tracking purposes and for lessons learned, et cetera, require that fire department that experiences a mayday conduct an after-action review at their discretion and in the manner they want to do it. And that way we can track and learn from it. And I'll draw your attention to projectmayday.net that you can look at your leisure, that has been looking at maydays for a period of time. And they have several thousand data points collected, and they're getting a lot of lessons learned, including what are the risk factors, what are the predictors of a firefighter calling a mayday, and then action items to try to correct that. So once again, I bring that to your attention. If you recall, I think one of the oppositions to doing such an after-action review was a financial burden on fire departments, and I submit to you that we're doing them anyway. So I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Anything else on item 11?
Item 12, future meeting dates.
I believe our future meeting dates are already set pretty well through the end of the year, correct? There are no changes. Everything's still good with room assignments and such. Okay. And next meeting will also include a workshop. Okay. Any questions or concerns about what's already set?
No.
New commissioners, so you guys may need to get up to speed on what's already set out there so that you can prepare your schedule accordingly. So, Deb, you want to just run down what's scheduled out for the rest of the year?
My 14th is your work time beginning at 1 p.m.?
Yes.
Okay. And then July 15th is your commission meeting beginning at 9 p.m. And then October 28th.
Any questions or concerns about any of those?
Item 13, appointment of ad hoc committee for the review of 37 Texas Administrative Code Part 13, Chapter 435 on firefighter safety.
Okay. Hey, commissioners. So the last commission meeting to catch the new commissioners up, and congratulations, and look forward to working with all of you as well. We spoke about, we put out for ad hoc to create a rules review of 435 and 427, and they put out for ad hoc, and then we kind of changed the last commission meeting, for the best I can remember, to reach out to the stakeholder groups to form a committee to do this rules review. And so with that charge, I reached out to the ones, and if I miss somebody, you guys please let me know, but to the Texas Fire Chief Association, the Texas Association of Firefighters, the State Fire and Fire Marshals Association of Texas, Texas Fire Marshals, and then Executive Director Chief Wisco on the Texas Commission on Fire Protection. And so with that, Chief Stevens had sent me a list, and so we broke it down in that last meeting of chief representing large metro department of medium size and an average size, and just kind of reached out to them because the thoughts is to get the stakeholders in who they feel would best represent them for that, or that had interest, so we can work through this. I think it's a very important task that we're trying to look at, because there's rules on both sides that need to be looked at. And so with that, for the large metro, they submitted Chief Joel Baker from Austin, from the medium size, Chief Robert Fite from Grand Prairie, and then from the average size, Chief Scott Kerwood from Hutto. And then for the Texas Association of Firefighters, they from the large, same thing, same breakdown, the large metro, they submitted Jim Reedy from San Antonio, Brad McCutcheon from Plano, and then with me being on as the chairman, we put me in there for the average size from Burleson. When I reached out to Executive Director Tim Rutland from the Texas Firefighters and Fire Marshal Association, he's going to serve, it would like to serve in that role. I reached out to Ms. Christensen for the Texas Fire Marshals, and they submitted Jason Barnes, and then Chief Wisco from the Texas Commission on Fire Protection Liaison was going to give us Tim Garner as the compliance officer. So again, just circling back to that, that was my understanding of the direction. That way everybody feels like they're well represented. Again, and if I miss somebody, I apologize. But with that, that's that was the list that was submitted for the 435 Firefighter Safety Committee.
Okay. So, Commissioners, it sounds like he's been given a charge to move forward with this ad hoc committee. It sounds like he put his team together and he's ready to jump off and do so. So, is everybody in agreement with the names that were read? And you want to take some action on, I guess, validating that as the commission to move forward with this ad hoc committee?
Yes, sir.
And a motion and a second for that.
So, I'll entertain a motion.
So moved.
All right.
Second.
I have a motion by Commissioner Vandegrift and a second by Commissioner Coney to move forward with the names as presented for this ad hoc committee.
And before we vote, I would just like to make sure that I didn't miss any stakeholder groups that were out there. I worked with Zach Lisco just to make sure. So just before we, and if there's somebody we missed later, then I would just like to have somebody from that group if we need to. But I think that was everybody.
Does that change either one of you? Does it change your motion? Okay. All right. Okay. Any other discussion? With that, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. Thank you.
Item 14, appointment of ad hoc committee for the review of 37 Texas Administrative Code, Part 13, Chapter 427 on training facility certification.
Commissioner Hamilton.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Chairman. Welcome all the new commissioners and been looking forward to working with you and making this a great couple of years with us. On 427, From Director Wisco, we through the web page we accepted different areas from the state as far as people that were interested in possibly serving on this, because each one of my sections had more than one representative. It was three TFCP certified instructors from a fire department based training division, three instructors representing the community college fire training program, three certified instructors representing the university, one certified instructor from the fire training company, and then a compliance officer. Just going through these and visiting around a little bit, I have come up with three names for the instructors representing fire department-based training divisions. If you would like me to read those names at this time,
sure.
Just from the list, I've chosen Brad Easley from Sugarland, Richard Salero from Laredo, and James Pitt from Port Arthur. TCFP certified instructors representing Community College Fire Training Program, Jacob Smith from Tarrant County College, George Malone from Collin County, Stephen Malley from Weatherford College. My hang up on this, on the third one, is there from the University Fire Training Program. There were none submitted that represent those, if I'm reading this correctly. I've reached out to Chairman Steelman and past Chairman Moore, and there's a possibility that I would like to put in a name of date from Anger from Teeks to possibly sit on this committee, but I do not have two other names to fill that from universities. They just weren't submitted. Representing the fire training deal, I've got Mick Moffitt, trainingdivision.com, and as far as a compliance officer, that would kind of be up to Executive Director Wisco.
It'll be Rick Wallace.
Rick Wallace. Okay, that's who I'd pick. So just those are the ones that fill the bill and the charge that was given to me to try to do this from the names that were submitted. And that, like I said, that was put out on the webpage and a considerable amount of time for people to go review and submit their names, except for the university. So if I need two more names from the university, I'm open for names to do that. And if Chris Anger would be available from possibly Teeks to fill one of those positions on the university side.
All right. So, Commissioners, I think what I would probably suggest is maybe we allow him the same latitude to fill those positions as names become apparent, but not to lose any more time on getting this ad hoc committee moving forward. So maybe a motion framed up that would allow him that type of flexibility. So
moved.
Okay. All right. So, motion by Commissioner Glenn, second by Commissioner Jones. Any other discussion?
Yes, sir. The only thing like that is we spoke in the last meeting. I talked about putting my mind's gone blank. I apologize.
McCullough.
Pat McCullough is the chair of the Testing Curriculum Committee on that, since they are going over training rules and that. So I would like to see if we could add him.
Yeah, that would just be another spot that we would add to this. Yeah.
That affects three. Okay. Okay. Any other discussion? All right. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? Motion passes.
Item 15, request from Kevin Price regarding proposed rule changes to 37 Texas Administrative Code, Part 13, Chapter 429, Fire Inspector and Plans Examiner, Subchapter A, Minimum Standards for Fire Inspector Certification, Section 429.3, Minimum Standards for Basic Fire Inspector Certification.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Price is going to be on the phone, so it's probably going to be hard to hear him, but item 15 and 16 are both items that he submitted, so I don't know if you want to open both of them up so you can discuss both or just one at a time. That's up to you.
Yeah, let's go ahead and do both.
As well as item 16, request from Kevin Price regarding proposed rule changes to 37 Texas Administrative Code, Part 13, Chapter 431, Fire Investigation, Subchapter A, Minimum Standards for Fire Arson Investigator Certification, Section 431.3, Minimum Standards for Basic Arson Investigator Certification.
Kevin, are you there?
Yes, I am. Good morning, commissioners. Thank you for allowing me the chance to present this to y'all. So what I'm asking for is in both of these certification requirements, I'm pursuing a bachelor's degree for higher education for fire administration, as I'm sure a lot of other firefighters and fire officers have done throughout their careers. In that, I uploaded all my education to FIDO in hopes of getting fire inspector and potentially fire investigator moving forward to kind of open up promotional opportunities and stuff like that. As I was doing that, I was advised by commission staff that I had exceeded the hours on there for master. And I replied saying, well, I'm going for fire investigator, and fire inspector, and want to apply this degree and those hours towards that. At which time I was told, well, you don't have hazmat 1, 2, or 3. In there, and you got to do a records review. Records review, I understand to an extent. However, when I inquired what hazmat 1, 2, or 3 was, which is in both of these as requirements, I was told that 1 and 2 is awareness and ops, and 3 is technician. I'm currently certified as a technician, and just about every firefighter in the state has gone through awareness and ops as part of basic recruit school. So I asked them, I said, well, you know, it's not on there because it's not going to be spelled out. It just says Basic Recruit Academy. I did a lot of my associates work through Blinn College. So it just says Teak's Basic Firefighter 1 through 4 on there. It doesn't spell it out because it's part of the curriculum. So what I'm asking is that it either be amended in the rules for these certifications to say you must have awareness and ops, or strike it completely from the rules, because anyone going for it that has firefighter certification or hazmat tech certification already meets that requirement.
Any questions?
I can make a recommendation just from staff is that we kick this not only to our certification staff, but also the advisory committee and let them work on this and come up with the best solution and bring that back to you when they have that.
We don't need to take any action on that, do we?
No. I would like to point out, though, that the obviously, as some of you know, the hazmat ops and awareness became part of the basic academy. We probably hadn't captured everybody. So out of 35,000, it probably got 20,000 or close to 20,000 to have it, but you still got another 15 old heads like a few of us sitting around this table that probably wouldn't have had it. So I think the groups are going to have to work together and figure out how to word that to cover everybody.
But I agree.
I think between staff and the advisory committee, I bet they can work this out.
So that was going to be my recommendation. Honestly, with Chief Wisco, we move that and let them look at it since we're dealing with certifications and all that.
I would agree.
Also had another, we received another comment. I believe, I don't think it made it to your packet, but we handed him out this morning. And I think he's also on the Zoom line if he wants to make a comment.
Sure.
Mr. Dunza. Woody, are you there? Can you hear us?
Yes, I'm here. I was just going to address Mr. Price's point in the letter that he didn't think the courses existed at the state level. They still do exist at the state level in the Workforce Education Course Manual, but that's not a comment on the merits of what he's actually requesting. At some point, the state college level will need to change the competencies for those three courses to align with commission certifications.
Okay.
So we'll direct staff to look further into that and bring it forward as a future item.
We'll do that.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Item 17, request from Kelly Kistner regarding fire marshal certification.
Commissioners, good morning. Want to take a quick minute and address a certification issue that I'm here on behalf of the Texas Fire Marshal Association as the chairman of their professional development committee. And the proposal I'm going to put forward here is endorsed by the Fire Marshal Association Executive Board. And I think you'll hear from at least one other where there's quite a bit of support for it. Currently, there is no certification in the state of Texas for fire marshals. We have inspectors, we have investigators. However, there's nothing for the fire marshal. As we ask this, what we'd like to ask for is basically an ad hoc committee or a committee to explore the possibility of the fire marshal certification with the understanding that we do not intend the certification to be required, that this would be an optional certification to move forward with, much like the different fire officer classes are, many of the other certifications that TCFP offers. This program started in 2013. There was a group of us here within the state. You've heard from Chief Christensen this morning from the Texas Fire Marshal Association update. She was part of that as well. And what we did is started to look at, is there a way to put a curriculum or certification or a course together that's based on NFPA 1037, which is that standard on professional qualifications for fire marshals. We continued working on that. And ultimately now there's only one provider. It's not a certification course, but it is an executive management program for fire marshals. Why we're looking at this is one, to provide additional professional development, but also to increase basically professionalism and the competence within the managerial levels of the fire marshal ranks across the state of Texas. Some of you may ask, well, we already have fire officer 1, 2, 3, 4. We have some other programs that are out there. Why don't we use those? If you are not certified as a structural firefighter, which as myself, I am, a lot of us that are here in the room that are fire marshals, they are. However, we have a lot of fire marshals across the state of Texas that are not certified as structural firefighters. If you're not certified as a structural firefighter, you cannot become certified as a fire officer. So one of the things that we'd like to do is put this program in place based on NFPA 1037, because a lot of those topics that are in there include human resources, they include budgeting. There is a lot of community risk reduction that goes with it, media relations, and a lot of those we would find in that officer 1 through 4 curriculum that some of the fire marshals cannot have access to. In addition, you get into the management of inspections, investigations, and public education programs. And again, that's taking it beyond that basic certification course. And how do we get into the management of those particular pieces? Right now, like I said, there's only one training program in the state. They are on class number 6, getting ready to come up. And there is a waiting list right now for that class that's being offered by one of the universities here in Texas. Currently, there are 2 states in the country who do have certified fire marshal programs. That's California and Florida. Florida is actually called a fire code administrator program. And so we would like to see Texas step up with these other states and offer that certified fire marshal program that we could put out to the professionals that are out there. Again, the TFMA executive board is in agreement with this. We'd like to push forward for the profession on that. Again, we're not asking for a mandatory class. We're asking for something that would be optional that would provide that professional development. And we'd like to ask for your support in exploring this opportunity or this certification in accordance with 1037. And we have had a couple discussions, phone calls with, we started with IFSAC. And if it meets the 1037 and the skills were there and the test bank was created, it is possible to also get this accredited if that's a route we wanted to go. So we would just ask for your support in exploring this and looking at this certification for the fire marshal side in Texas. And at that point, I'll take any questions if there's anybody else.
Commissioners, any questions?
I don't have a question specifically, Chairman, but I do have
a statement related to this. So Chief Kistner, I know from the Dallas Fire Department, and I believe in Austin, Chief Baker, you may have the same issues with the Fire Marshal's Office is a separate component of the fire department and their civilian employees. And we found within Dallas, there was a limitation on their professional development abilities. So I like the fact that this would be voluntary rather than a mandatory program, but the ability to have advanced professional development for the fire marshal's career path, I think would be very valuable to us.
Thank you. Any other comments?
Mr. Commissioner, I'd just simply like to say this is representative, as a representative from the public, as a public member here on the commission, I would certainly be in strong support of this certification process.
Yeah. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I think following the same suit, if we're dealing with a new certification that we pushed the testing curriculum on firefighter advisory, but hearing Chief Kistner and Commissioner Coatney, I think it sounds like it's an importance and to be a voluntary, so that would be my recommendation. Push it down, let them look at it, and come back with some recommendations.
Okay. So the actual request was to consider possibly putting together an ad hoc committee to explore this, correct? So would that happen before it would go to advisory and testing?
I think historically, the testing curriculum would kind of take the lead on that and work with Chief Kistner and develop that ad hoc committee and get the work done and then present it here into firefighter advisory for further comments and all that. Obviously, it'll be a process, but sure. I think the best place to start would be with Chairman McAuliffe and the curriculum and testing group.
Okay. Any other questions, comments? Chief Stevens?
Yes, sir. Les Stevens. On behalf of the Texas Fire Chiefs Association, we want to applaud the Fire Marshals Association. They involved us in this discussion early on, gave us an opportunity. We have vetted this through our executive board and have full support. One of the keys to this, as Chief Coatney spoke to, is leaving it optional. There may come a point in the future that would change, but at this point with civil service and some others, we saw some issues and some hurdles to that. But I think getting it created and getting it on the books and providing that path forward for the people that choose fire prevention as their career path is a great step forward for our fire service. So the TFCA fully endorses this proposal.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Okay. Hi, Laurie Christensen. On behalf of the Texas Fire Marshals Association, we also want to support this. I'm personally on the International Fire Marshal Association board with the National Fire Protection Association. So we are the national association. And this discussion is becoming even more prominent within the national programming. There's great concern that because fire marshals do not have that developmental and those classes that maybe would push them to the next level. So this is definitely being supported not only by the Texas Fire Marshal Association, but the International Fire Marshals Association. So anything we can do to assist, we are here for you, and I'll take any questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Got a question.
All right. Commissioner Wilson.
So Chief Kistner, I saw one concern that was brought up, and I think you were part of that discussion, and that was regarding 143 departments. But I think the fact that we keep this optional actually addresses that concern. And the concern was in the scenario of a captain or a battalion chief that takes a promotional exam. He's heavy on the suppression side, promotes, and then is assigned to the fire marshal's office. But if we keep this optional, that would actually enhance the development process, I would think, correct? Is that the thinking behind the optional part?
That is part of the optional thought, is with a lot of the 143 departments, is to keep that in mind and not to make it a requirement, but to make it optional. And then if that person is heavy on suppression, this is another class for them to go to, another tool to put in that toolbox as they move into that prevention side, the fire marshal side as well.
Yeah, I think that would enhance that opportunity and be a great tool.
Any other comments or discussion? Commissioner? Okay, so I'm hearing the general consensus is to push this to a curriculum and testing and let the process begin, correct?
Yes, sir.
And staff's going to make that happen.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. All right. We're kind of at a little pivotal point here on the schedule for the day. It's about 15 till noon. America eats at 12. Unless you guys want to push on, keep going and pushing forward with this. We still have quite a bit of stuff left on the agenda. So I'll hear from the group. Anybody starving to death? You want to push on through?
We're breaking whatever everybody else wants. We still got quite a bit to do. We still have quite a bit to do.
We do.
We're breaking, but whatever everybody wants to do.
All right. Anybody in the opposition to stopping now? And let's take a lunch break and then we'll resume. Everybody good with that? Okay. We'll go ahead and adjourn for lunch and we will start back at, say, 1:10. Yeah. Commissioners, be sure to turn your microphones back on. 13 after 1, and the Texas Commission on Fire Protection is back in session. So, Bob, Commissioner Morgan.
Item 18, 37 Texas Administrative Code, Part 13, Chapter 421, Standards for Certification.
Guess I'm up, huh? The purpose of this request is basically, if you read our rules about individual certificate holders, it allows for exceptions when there's been a good faith clerical error. There could be, as we have learned in the last year, other circumstances that affect this. And so an example I'll offer you is that an individual takes care of his own certification. He renewed. He didn't realize that he renewed late, so he was basically hanging out there as late. And then because of the COVID and his other duties and a technical issue between computers talking to one another, we didn't get his payment. And so he catches that the first day of November, which is right after the renewal period closed, called, presented his case. The rule says he's got to go back, take a test, and renew. When you start reading the statute allowed for good faith errors and other issues like that. And it said the commission could have a rule to overrule that. I went and read the rules and we vaguely cover it. So what I'm asking to do here is just to put a statement in here. You'll see the statement under C. It says upon determination by the executive director of a special circumstance. So in other words, you're not just going to hand them away. If they paid late or didn't pay, we're not just going to renew it. But certain situations are going to come up. I believe that this language would be fitting, and we'll have a group discussion and decide the best way to handle it.
Okay. Commissioners, thoughts, comments?
I think it's a good idea.
I'll entertain a motion.
So move. Second.
I have a motion by Commissioner Hamilton, second by Commissioner Jones. Any other discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Passes. Commissioners, but I'm sorry, before we move on to item 19, I would like to ask that we excuse Commissioner Cantu. He's not going to be able to join us for the rest of the meeting this afternoon. He had a pre-standing doctor's appointment this afternoon that he could not cancel. He'd been on the waiting list for a while, so I'll entertain a motion for that.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Commissioner Glenn, second by Commissioner Jones. Any other discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you.
Item 19, 37 Texas Administrative Code, Part 13, Chapter 435, Firefighter Safety, Section 435.19, Enforcement of Commission Rule.
Commissioners, it's me again. This might be an interesting discussion, but I want to kind of lay this out. What I'm asking to do is to change the way we initiate compliance inspections. And so I want to preface that with, for years, everybody that's been affiliated with the commission in any way or form has heard the complaints or had valid concerns about the surprise inspections that take place. So, you know, they feel like we're trying to get them. When COVID came along, really started having an impact here on the state, there were 8 weeks that we didn't do compliance inspections because everybody was trying to figure out what was going to happen and how we needed to work this. As we looked at it from the financial side, we needed to get back to work, both with testing and inspections and all of that. So we started talking about this. I worked with the compliance team, and we came up with a system to respect the lockdowns that every department was in, where somebody couldn't just come in off the street to a station or whatever. If you put that in perspective, That's us. We're just walking into a fire station to inspect PPE or to look at equipment. We'd start notifying departments, say we're up, and they'd say, man, can we do this, you know, some other time? We've got everybody locked down. We're trying to protect our people. We had staff who was concerned about going into a fire station where everybody could have been sick or they could have been exposed to something. So for the COVID period, we started initiating these inspections with an email. And we laid out an email. It's your turn. It's time for us to come back. We want to work with you. We want to be respectful of everybody's safety. Email us the following documents so that we can start reviewing records via email. We didn't have to have face-to-face contact. And then we established a date, a time, and some kind of system for each department that we could see the PPE. What happened was somewhat of unbelievable, but it was a huge success on both sides. This started working, and we started finding it was easier. We were getting better compliance. We were getting better response. We were still finding issues, but we were able to do it in a more organized fashion. And more so, we started getting an overwhelming number of emails from fire chiefs, college directors saying, man, this is fantastic. I appreciate it. Because any fire chief in here knows the commission only shows up when you're out of town or unavailable to meet with them. And one of the requirements of that inspection is to meet with the fire chief. So short of just saying, chief, schedule a time for us, we would work a window, a two-week window, and it's working out. So after a year of doing this now, the rule says it still has to be unannounced. What we're proposing is the language you see highlighted there. Basically, we're going to initiate the inspection with an email. That email, they don't know it's coming. I mean, when they get it, there's a requirement, a certain amount of time to submit documentation back to us and start working with us to set it up. It's been successful. It was an accident. We did it because of the circumstances in the world, but I kind of like to keep it. I'd like to change the rule to reflect that so that we're not walking a fine line there on the rules.
Okay. Commissioners, I'll open up the floor for any questions, comments, or discussion.
I agree 100%. And we've had chiefs come and visit with us in the past saying we would like to at least have notification some way or another to where the proper person is even in the building that's going to be needs to be there to accomplish this. We're not trying to hide anything. We're just, when we don't know when they're coming, that, you know, I agree 100%. I would recommend this completely.
And I can also support it. I think that it's a great idea. You know, I've been one of those chiefs that has had people show up when I'm out of town. I think they look at your schedule and find out when you're out of town to actually attend. And so I think this is good. I think it's logical. It gives complete transparency of how we're going to do business. And Chief Wisco, I appreciate the fact that you said this is happenstance because of COVID. But I want to personally say, since you've been the executive director, your level of engagement to the fire chiefs across the state of Texas has really amped up the game. And I know that's been appreciated. And a lot of my colleagues have told me how much they appreciate you getting out there. So thank you for that as well.
I appreciate that.
Mr. Wilson.
I would submit that we make one change to the way that the wording is, where it says 48 hours of.
I'm sorry, the dumpster over.
Within 48 hours.
Okay.
Of notification to right. Say within 48 business hours.
Okay.
Of notification, where it's they're not notified on a Friday and the clock starts ticking.
Okay.
I absolutely agree with this provision. I think it's a great resolution to getting the, you know, complying with the rules and for them to also comply. It settles both sides. So I think this is a great option. Thank you so much for coming up with this option.
Well, sure. And if I could add two things. One, I visited with TDH and also with TECO. They do the same thing. And I've talked to them about their processes. TECO uses a very similar model where it's a non-aggressive approach, but they go in and they find issues with them. The other thing I'll add is that since we started this last March, and Paul's in the room, he can back this up, we're still finding compliance issues, and they know we're coming. And so I don't believe there's people out there intentionally doing something wrong, but I believe the best way to achieve compliance is to work together. And if they're less intimidated or fearful of a state government entity walking in and inspecting them, and they see it more as a partnership, I think we'll achieve compliance quicker and across the board.
Mr. Chairman, I was just going to say, what any input from the actual compliance officers, what their thoughts?
You know, I allowed Paul and his team really to come up with the idea and the concept. And I think the feedback from all of them has been, it's working great from their perspective. It seems to work better that they pretty much know when they're coming and they can walk in and sit down with them. I'll tell you that I have gone on a couple of the inspections for the larger departments and been able to walk in and sit down with the fire chief, and they're just blown away. One, that they had a chance to get organized and set up for it, and how flawless it was going and how quick it went. You know, it takes 3 or 4 days for a larger department, say a Fort Worth or Dallas or somebody. They accomplished a large city. Actually, we've done 3 since we started this. They accomplished them in 3 days, 3.5 days, whereas before it was taking 4 to 6 days and an entire staff. And we're sending in 2 or 3 people now and knocking it out a lot faster. So it's been effective, and I just like to see the rules reflect the change and make it legal.
Sure. Okay. Commissioners, with that, I'll entertain a motion.
So moved.
So let me clarify, is that with the condition
of Rusty's information? I'll second it on that condition.
Okay. So I have a commission. I mean, I have a motion by Commissioner Hamilton, second by Commissioner Wilson. Any other discussion? All those in favor, please signal by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes.
Item 20, review of 2020 data collected regarding firefighter injuries and the development of recommendations to be submitted to the State Fire Marshal's Office for inclusion in its annual report.
Good afternoon, commissioners, and everybody who's here. I'm Grace Wilson, and I'm the public information manager here at the commission. And as such, I'm the administrator for the injury reporting program. So I do the injury report every year. And I suppose that you've all had a chance to look at it. So let's talk about it. What do you guys want to talk about? Do you have any comments or concerns or questions?
I have a question.
Yes, sir.
Do you know approximately what percentage of fire departments are actually reporting?
Yes. If you look on page 57, let's see. The third paragraph from the bottom, it states that when these initial numbers were run, it's about a 72% reporting rate.
So we have 28% of the departments that still could probably do a little bit better job of getting the information to us.
If I can, there's a couple of clarifications I need to make. These numbers you're seeing in this first draft report were run in?
I think in January.
January. Since then, we've continued to receive information that are changing some of these numbers. So she's developed the draft to start working with how to lay it all out and see that. We'll have a final draft, final numbers to you before July. But that's the lowest I think we've seen since we started this 11 years ago is 72%. Mm-hmm. You're not required to report it, but the numbers have been higher before. And I think from talking with Grace, we have seen that number changing just in the last couple of months. People are just getting caught up really in their
It will go up.
Yeah.
It remains to be seen how far it goes up, but it will go up.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
And we also stress during the compliance inspections, we stress the importance of reporting, even though it's not required. It's beneficial to the Texas Fire Service to know about those injuries.
I appreciate that, Chief. I know one of the challenges that you have to go in and independently report through FIDO as opposed to the information just being drawn directly out of workers' comp. So it's redundant paperwork for fire departments to do. And, you know, if we could find a way for workers' comp to see it not as a HIPAA issue, just to give us numbers without any particular patient information, maybe that would be a better way for us to capture the data and eliminate some of the work on the independent fire departments. So, you know, I'd certainly like to see that be a recommendation, at least for them.
Absolutely agree. You know, finding a way to get more reports, mindful of HIPAA violations, is very, very important, and it does affect a lot of things in this industry. You know, as a public member, you know, seeing how cancer has affected a lot of firefighters and other injuries too, and if it's not properly documented, it can't be properly address in this industry and on many levels. So it's very important. So if we can just find a way to streamline and get more departments to report, that would be great to help us with our data.
I want to ask a quick question on that point to staff, I guess. So in the past, if we've broached this subject with the work comp side of it, I mean, is it just an absolute shut the door in your face? No, it can't happen. I mean, has there been any dialogue that, hey, maybe there's a way? I'm using a reference that I know where I work, we have business use agreements with other entities that we share a common interest with, where we can share HIPAA data, and that business use agreement protects the HIPAA aspect of it. And it's really coming into play with community paramedicine and things like that. So is there not some way, even at the state level, that some kind of relationship between two state agencies could not play out?
I have to believe there's still an opportunity for that. And we're going to work towards that now that we're finally able to dig out of the weeds from a few other things that have been going on. But okay. Yeah, I believe it can. And it maybe it's just there's been changes on both sides of the house of people or opinions or attitudes or whatever. I don't know, but we need to be able to sit down with them and talk about that. But I think just like with everything else, we can get there if we communicate a little better.
Sure. I went to a meeting a couple of years ago with Tim Rutland and some of the people at Workers' Comp. And it wasn't that they wouldn't or couldn't share the information with us. It was that the information, you really couldn't tell if a person was a firefighter. So it wasn't that useful to us. Like you could tell that they worked for the city of Houston or something like that, but you couldn't drill it down so far that you could tell like what their actual job was. So that's
so it's almost like the work form, the work comp form needs a checkbox on it, an extra checkbox to maybe delineate. I mean, I'm just saying that sounds like a simple fix, and I realize it's probably not. But
I mean. That was the big takeaway for me that I got from that meeting. I think that it wasn't going to be super easy for them to share the information just because of that. But it wasn't that they weren't willing. It was just
they didn't have a mechanism.
Yeah.
We'll see if we can improve the communication there and see if we can get something like that.
Do you remember when this came about that it was a voluntary versus just part of the compliance component?
You're testing my memory. I don't remember all those details, but it was put forward by the legislature during the previous sunset review. And really, it was to gather the data and then send it to the state fire marshal's office to be part of their report. I learned shortly after getting here that since about 17, the data has not been part of the state fire marshal's report, not because we weren't sending it to them. There was a disconnect over there, and it just wasn't making it in their report. We corrected that pretty quick. And that relationship is improved because of those conversations. But I think there's room to learn more about it and find a solution if it's a checkbox or whatever it is. So we'll keep working on that. Because these numbers are alarming that they're so low, the reporting numbers, not the number of injuries.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
I was just want to ask Chief question right quick. You know, in your abstract, and I maybe need to speak to this young
She's
lady.
She's smarter. Ask her.
Well, that's what I'll do. you know, in your abstract on page 57 there, you have, you know, there's some verbiage in there about total number of incidences and those kind of things. That's common knowledge or kind of common verbiage in industry a lot of times when I do a lot of tracking for, you know, total recordable incident rates, lost time incident rates, and those kind of things. Those particular indicators for us anyway, from the industry side, we use those in a lot of KPIs when we're getting ready to go to, let's say, budget. Because, you know, when those numbers are down, those incident rates are down, then the top management goes, man, you know, we can get some more money out of this because our safety culture is right, the performance is right out there. And so I was just thinking in terms of, you know, as we progress on with this particular report, if we might not start drilling down and actually looking at like days away from work, tracking that as well, and incident rates and that kind of good stuff. So we can use that to help us when you go to the legislature for money, because it does definitely impact a culture. And they can see a culture change within the fire service then, you know, they know your programs are working. There's some credibility there. It's just my comments and thoughts anyway.
Sure. Well, and I'm going to go out on a limb and tell you, too, there is no requirement to report. And a few of us remember the big debate about reporting a zero every month, you know, go in, even if you don't have any injuries, go in and put zero in that box and all that. And there was some pushback. I know one fire chief at the time, very close, and he wasn't going to do it. Since then came around. But I have to believe that some of the decline in the number of entities reporting, just because in some of the smaller ones, they're just not having injuries. They don't have a lot of people. They don't have a lot of staff, and it's not happening. And they're just not going to the trouble of reporting at zero. So, you know, we might not ever say 100%. There could be a reason for that percentage to be slightly lower, because what we're doing is working. I think we all know a lot of it is working. And we need to drill down. And there's a lot of things that I believe all of us want this injury report to capture that we just don't have a mechanism for right now. And we constantly, Grace and other members of staff are constantly looking at ways to improve this. I mean, this year's report, these are some rather significant numbers, but when you break it down, a lot of it's related to the COVID. So then you really start to look at our other injury numbers. And yeah, we're high in a few categories, station activity and things, but our burn injuries are lower, and we see it continually getting lower every year. So some of it is attributed to we're having success. We just need to improve the way we report it and document it.
Okay.
I have a question. Is there a time requirement from the time of the incident or injury that it should be reported?
If it's a serious injury, if somebody is put in the hospital because of it, I believe it says they have five days they should report something to us. And again, we stress that in the compliance inspections, but you go back to the argument, it's not mandatory. So we're still struggling here. The legislation directing us to do this didn't really give us the authority to mandate it back in the day. So.
Okay. Commissioners, any other questions, comments, concerns? We need to take any action on this?
No action is necessary. I don't know if you noticed, but at the very last page of the report, there's a recommendations on the injury report from the Firefighter Advisory Committee. If you had a chance to look at that or not, but that might help y'all when you want to come up with your own recommendations. That's page 91.
And to Grace's point, for years, this was sprung on the commission, usually at this April meeting, and you had 3 months to get recommendations from the commissioners, from the advisory committee, and from anybody else that had one, get it all put together, and we've got to have it over before September 1. We kind of stepped up the recommendation piece because we let the Health and Wellness Committee and the Firefighter Advisory Committee see this draft report and start developing some recommendations so that we can attach those with whatever you guys come up with, and we'll have a more complete report when it comes to the recommendation piece. Because the goal in July, I want to be able to hand you the final draft with recommendations in it, and you all can discuss that. And if we need to add something to it at that point, we can. But so the report you get in July will be more complete and a lot more detailed, and it'll be the one we're ready to submit to be forwarded on.
And please keep in mind that we're willing to take recommendations and requests for the report itself, mm-hmm. but what we really need from you for the final report that goes to the fire marshal's office is recommendations for the fire service.
Okay. Commissioners, any other comments? Okay. Thank you.
That takes us to item 21, advisory committees, including but not limited to committee makeup, term limits, and meeting requirements.
Mr. Chairman, as we had discussed, trying to get a little bit ahead of the sunset recommendations here. It hasn't been finally approved. The recommendations have not. They're still moving through there. In fact, we've had some communication today about it. They're getting closer to approving us moving forward. But there are recommendations in their report about the Firefighter Advisory Committee and all our advisory committees. So to get ahead of this and to try to accomplish something successfully within the same year this report comes out, we put this agenda item on here because while we have the Firefighter Advisory Committee, it's a point of contention. There's people that hate it. There's people that love it. We can't focus on just one committee. There's recommendations in there about term limits. I don't think anybody's opposed to that, but there are considerations with the different committees. So at least as staff, I would like to see some clear direction for all the committees so that they all function the same way and that you all have full control. These are your committees, and there really are no rules guiding it. And I think that's what got us to where we're at right now. It was always in the statute, but there are not rules that lay out what committees are going to be what, how they're going to be staffed and all. If the sunset legislation passes, the language is removed about the makeup of the Firefighter Advisory Committee, but there's still nothing about any of the others. And I'll tell you, and I was a member of Firefighter Advisory, the most valuable committee this agency has had for years is your curriculum and testing. And there's going to be some challenges with the term limit that's been put in place there, but we'll be able to work with it. But we need to have a broad discussion about all committees moving forward from here. I don't think we'll resolve it today, but we need to start talking about it today. Well, what they're going to look like, how they're going to function. Are they going to meet on Zoom? Are they going to meet here so that the staff can work with them? Who appoints the people to them? What are their functions going to be as a committee? You know, how do they report back? We probably need to lay all that out in a rule, and let's prevent from getting to where we're at right now. Let's prevent that moving forward. So there's a lot of interest in this topic, no doubt. And I think it would be prudent to just start trying to address it. So that's why I put it in front of us.
Okay. So commissioners, with that, we'll open up the floor for discussion.
Well, I mean, sir, they really probably all ought to be, I would assume, roughly the same. If it's a committee under the footprint of the Texas Commission on Fire Protection, there's not any sense in having these sets of rules for this committee and this sets of rules for this committee that I see at this point in time. I could be totally wrong. We hear a lot of stuff about, you know, it's not a lifetime deal. I've been charged with several different places to limit the number, just like the commissioners. It's a 6-year deal if that fits, you know, and start the process. We just went through all of the candidates and we've got names for the Firefighter Advisory Committee that are on the books for the next year. You know, it's time to follow what Sunset's recommended. And from what I understand and have read, they recommended the last time they had Sunset and nobody decided to do anything about it. So we start at the top. However, that came down from Sunset or some of the stuff that we also received by email from some of the larger departments that laid out some items that were actually in the Sunset list as to what to do. And if we step on some toes, I guess we step on some toes. If we make some happy, we make some happy, but set them to where they match.
In your notebook, there's one letter, I believe it's from the State Firefighters Association, and then his handouts on your desk this morning. You should have found two additional letters for this agenda item from some Metro City chiefs. So it all just kind of rolls into one. And I know it's a huge topic, but I think it is something we need to address. Probably going to take more than one meeting too.
Sure.
I know the both sides of it and seeing the letters. And, you know, if we're going to do a committee, I'm sure it's going to go through Firefighter Advisory and like Chief Wisco said, start addressing it. Just throw it out there. I mean, we do have we just formed the 435 committee today, which is firefighter safety. However, we have, I feel like, a pretty good broad representation on there from stakeholders. So I don't mind having our committee look at it if that's what everybody wants to do, or we can form a separate committee or however. But like I said, we do have a broad of all different stakeholders that are on that committee. And for that committee, I plan on having them here in Austin. We'll zoom in who we have to zoom in, but you know, post it like any other ad hoc committee to get, you know, the public time to come in and say so.
I think it's certainly critical we do our due diligence, and we all know what the Sunset staff has recommended. I think that they have put the wheels in motion. I don't think we can let this happen again like what happened in 2009. I've read the letters too. I like the one from Houston. I think it lays out a good framework, but I think as we go through and discuss all the different committees, we certainly need to do something sooner than later with the advisory committee. This keeps coming up, and all those folks aren't sitting out there because they're all happy about the way it is now, obviously. And we certainly have to, in my opinion, we certainly have to look hard at the 6-year term limits. Mm-hmm. But I think we need to get that train moving down the track as soon as possible.
And I agree as well. The recommendations are very helpful, you know, especially with the Sunset provisions. So thank you as well. You know, it's a lot that we should be diligent in reading and going through and trying to make both sides happy and come to a good resolution in how we can implement the majority, or how we can implement these measures following what our authority is, such as the term limits. That is a good idea, and it's something we need to discuss. And an issue with that, or with changing members, would be the training. Proceeding, because there's always a lag in time for the new person to come in and step in and learn. And especially for public members, like myself, it takes some time to understand the industry. That's something that needs to be considered when we're discussing it as well. And, what is the best option to resolve this?
Any other comments, Commissioner?
I think that I agree with what the other commissioners have said. I think obviously since when this was originally recommended back in 2009, no action was taken, we're obligated to do something moving forward. You know, we can't just let it sit again. But the reality of it is there is kind of an upswell in the direction of how the commission addresses particular issues. And the advisory committee and some of the other subcommittees are part of that upswell of information that's coming in. We talked about the Houston letter. There's a letter from Corpus Christi. The State Firefighters Association has a letter also regarding this. So I think it requires a closer look. It requires information to come out and be spread across the fire service so the chiefs from the organizations can provide us their feedback so we can make an informed decision and move forward with what not only works best for the commission, but also for the fire service as a whole. So I would support fully it be evaluated through committee.
I want to make a comment. I appreciate what Commissioner Jones was saying about tagging this on to that other ad hoc committee, but I really don't want to take the focus away from what y'all's purpose is, because you got a lot of work out in front of you to really get that going. And for lack of, I'm not saying this to be funny, but we need a committee to explore committees, right? So would that be most appropriate from this committee that's ultimately responsible, this board of commissioners, to develop a subcommittee just to look at this particular topic, especially because it relates directly back to a Sunset item? Is that, I just want to float that idea that just.
If you're asking me, I'm going to tell you yes. And here's why I say that. If you look at the different committees, you look at what they're tasked with doing. The one reality is that everything that those committees do, if those committees didn't exist today, the 13 of you all would be asked to do it in two meetings. Okay. That's updating curriculum. That's changing rules. That's looking at enforcement policies and how we do that. Knowing NFPA standards inside and out and upside down. As a body of 13, you're not going to get that accomplished. There's too much going on here. Staff, we wouldn't be able to accomplish it. So it seems crazy to have a committee to figure out what we're going to do with the committees, but it probably needs to be a committee that's a combination of commissioners, a handful of commissioners, along with the stakeholders. And what do you want this to be when it's over with? How do you want this to look? Because curriculum and testing, I'll say this again, after 6 years on there, you've gotten to go through one NFPA standard revision cycle. So you barely understand that process to be able to update the curriculum here. The 6 years there, when it comes to our curriculum and testing piece, is going to cripple us. So we're going to have to find a way to make that work, because we've got some brilliant minds sitting on that committee. And some of them have been there 30 years. Nobody's ever complained about our curriculum. All right. Those guys are doing good work, but there's a constant turnover. Your firefighter advisory committee, in the last 5 years, six of the nine positions have been vacated and filled with new members. In the next 2 to 3 years, they're probably going to be a complete turnover if that were to stay that way. I think it's clear it's not going to stay that way. But what do you do with your current committees while you're transitioning over to this? And so there's a lot at play. There's 13 smart people sitting here, but I don't think you want to try to tackle that in 3 months doing it remotely. I don't see that happening. I think this is going to require some effort, some communication, some input from the stakeholders. And so the subcommittee idea to figure out what we're going to do with committees is probably viable.
and to play off of that, most of the people sitting around this circle represent one of those stakeholder mm-hmm. groups. So, right. I mean, that voice, that outlet or that pathway it exists right here.
Right. I agree with you. So,
can I ask one more question?
Sure.
Through Sunset, and what I saw at your date in 09, I guess, and then mm-hmm. again, they wanted all the recommendations sent to them. And I think the main thing they talked about was the firefighter advisory. I don't know what they want to see to prove to them that it is a good committee, a working committee that we use on a regular basis. Because it's even been stated that it doesn't even exist on law anymore. So why do you still have it?
What the report says is they want us to do something with it to come more in line with other state agencies. They're going to want to see it when they come back to review us. And that's in 12 years, unless they get a complaint before then and directed to do so. It's incumbent upon you all, if that legislation passes, to do something with this.
And so, if I may, among the 13 or even our stakeholders, who knows what those rules and regulations are on other committees and other agencies state in the states?
There's a state government code that is referenced, and I have a copy of it here for everybody. We can pass these around.
Okay. Answer my question.
So that one, since that one. We came prepared for that one question, Commissioner Hamilton.
Commissioner Trump.
I think, having representative each decided
to discuss
how would it
apply
to
each. Sure. As you guys are reviewing that, any other questions before I open up the podium? I know Chief Stevens, I think, is in the wing over there.
Chief? No, they got input for us.
Les Stevens, St. Marcus Fire Department. I'd want to applaud the approach that Commissioner Jones took to putting together his committee. And as you guys endeavor to tackle this, I think, as you pointed out, the room speaks for itself. But I liked what Mike did in reaching out to the different stakeholder groups. The process where you apply online, I've got a guy he's applied for everything you can apply for. He's never heard a word, never even been called, never contacted. And so he just gets frustrated. So I think going to those stakeholder groups, which are informed, they're meeting on a regular basis. You guys were involved, Rusty and JP, in our process. We sought out people, we nominated, we voted on those people as representatives of our specific association to that particular committee. So as you look to how to restructure, how to reshape this, I applaud you. I hope you do not let it lay and don't take action for another 12 years. But I think the path that Mr. Jones put together is probably something we should look very closely at. I think it does create a great way for each of the agencies, the Fire Marshal Association, the Firefighters Association, the Fire Chiefs Association, to have some control and input, and maybe even allow them to determine what the term limits are of their members on that committee. If I've heard Mr. Wisco speak a couple of times about the institutional knowledge, if you will, on testing and curriculum, and I think that's true. We got a lot of very smart folks in the fire service around Texas that are looking to get involved. So I think getting the more fingerprints on it, the better. So thank y'all for taking up this item. And Mr. Wisco, thank you for putting it on there for him. Thank you.
Good afternoon, commissioners. First of all, I want to congratulate all the new appointees on being selected and serving. And I want to thank all the incumbent commissioners for all the work that you guys do for to improve the fire service here in Texas. My name is Sam Pena. I'm the fire chief for the city of Houston. I did submit a letter, a proposal, a comment for this item to speak about the makeup, the turn limits, and the meeting requirements of this advisory committees. I completely agree with Director Wisco. We need to, these committees serve a purpose. This is not, we're not wanting to get rid of the committees, but we do want to make sure that we're meeting the spirit of the law that's laid out in Texas Government Code 2110 and the recommendations of the Sunset Commission. So that is the purpose. I did provide, you should have the document in front of you. I know this is just one of several proposals that you all are going to get on this issue. But what we're asking the commission is just to make the determination as far as how these committees are constituted and what the parameters are and how they're going to serve as an advisory board or as an advisory body to this commission. As simple as that. This open-ended membership for years and years and years, I understand the institutional knowledge. But as Chief Stevens has mentioned, we need to tap into the wide pool of talent that exists in the state of Texas in terms of fire protection. And a diversity of thought, a diversity of ideas is good for this organization, and it's good for the Texas Fire Service. So we implore you guys to give due consideration to the recommendations, and we want to be part of this solution. So again, we want to work in tandem with you all. We want to ensure that we're doing the right thing for our firefighters, for our municipalities, and we want to be part of this process. So we encourage you all to give due consideration to what we've submitted, and we're prepared to assist you all in wherever we can. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi again, commissioners. Jim Reedy for the firefighters. I just wanted to clarify that the 18,000 members of the Texas State Association of Firefighters are not in favor of this real drastic change. There needs to be changes, and the term limits that the commissioners are subject to in the letter are already going through the legislature right now. I think it's reasonable for 2 6-year terms, and we've discussed that. But when you talk about the experience that you get, you have 1, 2, 3 commissioners sitting up here that were members of Firefighter Advisory Committee that came up through Firefighter Advisory and now are commissioners for lending that experience. The Firefighter Advisory Committee and on all the other committees naturally goes through a selection or an attrition process. As was stated before, there are 6 people that are on there within the last, 3 years, Mike? 3 or 4 years. Mm-hmm. So, and as I looked at the Houston letter, they don't want to have anybody has simultaneous membership. Why wouldn't we want somebody that would volunteer for 2 committees, bring their expertise on 2 different committees? And the commissioners have the ability to choose them or not choose them. If they think they're on too many committees, then don't choose them. But why would we stifle that kind of volunteerism? Why would we want to stifle that kind of volunteerism? The line firefighters in this state need these committees, and they need representation on these committees. They need a voice, but they also need to have the ability to come and volunteer. I looked at some of the different things in the letter, and I do think that there needs to be a committee to look at it and to vet it out. But the firefighters on these different committees, curriculum and testing, firefighter advisory, and the ad hoc committees that we have serve a really important purpose here. But limiting it to 6 years, the uptake is pretty significant here at 6 years. So I myself now, after Chief Wisco left, am the longest serving member of Firefighter Advisory, 17 years. I volunteer. I come up here on my own. I participate on my own for no other reason. I'm still a lieutenant. It wasn't about my resume. So, and you, I don't think you want to stifle that. I don't think you want to stifle people coming up and participating. So I would just say, take that into consideration. I realize there's a lot of chiefs out here, but speaking on behalf of the Indians, we don't want anything quite that drastic. The ability to work with people, we have that ability, and we would like to work with you, with everybody, but let's make it a group process, not a thumb down on everybody. Thank you.
Danny Kistner, McKinney Fire Department. I wasn't going to come necessarily speak on this particular topic, but I do have to respond. When somebody comes up and says, I represent 18,000 people, and they're saying this, I would have to ask the question, are they well informed? Do they know what we're talking about? Do all 18,000 members of the firefighters, State Firefighters Association, know what's going on and what's being talked about here? Or is it just it's the opinion of a certain membership board, which is fine, but just clarify that when you're up here speaking. I just want to reiterate something that Chief Pena was saying, is that, and Chief Stevens, is that there are members out there that have applied for boards, and I don't know how many times, multiple times or what, but there are members out there that have applied and haven't received anything in return, don't know where they stand. And so I'm suggesting, are we having members that are sitting in multiple committees at the omission of other people that may contribute good and valuable ideas? And if we don't have some type of rotation, are we going to maintain some of the ideas and not even consider maybe outside the box thinking, new and better ideas that may be coming up, and we're going to hang on to the old? I submit to you, that's what happened in the 80s, in the 90s, in the 2000, and then 2010. And we're just now talking about firefighter occupational cancer. Just now, 40 years. It's time for some innovative, creative thinking. And I thank you for your time.
Thank you. I agree 100%.
Good afternoon, Sam Graff, Plano Fire Rescue. I was remiss earlier when I came and not congratulating the newest members of the commission. To my local 440 brother, congratulations. I know you'll serve us well. And to my former colleague in the DFW area, Chief Copney, I know y'all will do us well on here. You know, there's strong feelings on both sides of the issue. I've read both letters. I would be more in support, obviously, of the Houston version, but I'm not saying it's a perfect version. But I think it's a great will, a good place to start. I appreciate Mr. Wisco's comments about tribal knowledge. It's important. We deal with that in the fire service every day as we get turnover and people retire. We lose knowledge. But on the upside, those coming up make it a better profession and carry the ball forward. And I agree with Mr. Reedy. You do not want to stifle volunteerism, but you don't want a myopic viewpoint of the same volunteers over and over. If we have other people in the state of Texas that are volunteering and they're not getting a call back, that in of itself is an issue. We need to be able to broaden that pool of people that get to come forward and to serve. And I don't think term limits are a bad thing. I think it's incumbent upon me as the chief to make sure I'm grooming people to take my place. I believe I've done that. I think that's what we have to do on these committees as well, is you have to bring new blood in and you have to make sure you're preparing them and let the ball get carried forward. But I think diversity of thought, to quote Chief Pena, was a good comment. I think that serves us well in all facets of society, not just the fire service. Thank y'all.
Thank you.
I appreciate everybody coming up. And you know, I'm actually looking at the sunset says just, you know, develop, maintain, and use the training. I'm sorry, wrong area. I went too far. Basically just says to evaluate it. And I think that is the best way. And I appreciate Chief Stevens' words. And, that was the whole thing on firefighter safety. I mean, that's what we're here for the safety of firefighters and the job from the top to the bottom. You know, you got small departments out there that head chiefs are still having to get out there and help fight fire. You got, so but it's going to take a collaborative effort because there is strong feelings on both sides. And I understand what Jim's saying about the, and I do feel like the Texas State does a good job of you know, keeping those 18,000 members informed. That's what they want. 18,000 members want firefighter safety, the same as that's what the chiefs want. So I think, you know, to get, just like with the 435 committee that we have, and trying to move forward for the firefighter safety of what fits all aspects of both sides, we're going to have to do the same thing on this. And it's going to have to take everybody just putting pride aside and realizing to work together to get past this, to meet what Sunset wants. But I've been on that committee, and I've been there as well as you, Chairman Stillman, is, you know, it takes a little bit to understand what's going on and pick up with speed. And by the time you get it, then so why, you know, I see the Texas State Association with term limits. So I don't think we're, you know, that they're fighting term limits. But I think we do need to look at that. But I think it is going to take a committee for a committee. But I agree with Chief Wisco on the testing curriculum, you know, and I don't know what that looks like, but there is a lot of knowledge, and there is a lot of knowledge out in the fire service. But also, you know, where I've been in that, where I've evaluated test banks and things like that, that takes a lot of time and a lot of knowledge. So I guess all I'm saying is I agree with the committee made up of a lot of stakeholders, but I would like to see that to be, you know, much like I feel this 435 committee is, it's a collaborative effort to make the fire service better and not us against them. So,
okay. I agree with Mr. Wisco's comment also on it being on us to figure out how to deal with the term limits and et cetera. Yes, the onus is on us to do that. We have to, what we don't get to do, what I don't get to do back home is thumb my nose at my city manager when he asked me to do something and say, no, I'm not going to do it. That's not an option. When our legislators come at us with something like this, I don't believe we get to thumb our nose and say no to our legislators. It's on us to figure out. They told us what to do. It's on us to figure out the how and how to do it, how to carry out their will. I like the 6-year terms. I understand about experience. I also know that the danger that comes with long-term experience is that things tend to get very institutionalized. And we lose that, I wrote the term down, diversity of thought. I like that term. We lose that diversity of thought, that diversity of vision, and we need that with the up-and-coming folk. I know personally that there's been several people contact me wanting to know, how can I get on this committee? How can I get on that committee? And particularly with the advisory committee, had been trying for years to do that. I don't want to stifle volunteerism either, but we're stifling it right now from people who want to volunteer, and there's not a place for them. They've been trying to for years. So I just go back to what you said a while ago, Mike. Mm-hmm. It's on us. We've been told what we need to do. We're here because we're the ones to figure out how to do that. And I think it's on us to do that.
I would like to just also say change is good. There's several guys in the audience in the fire investigation business, and we didn't change for a long time, and it came back and bit us in the butt. And that forced change, and that change wasn't comfortable. It wasn't enjoyable, but it's really made the fire investigation business that much better. And so we need to do the same thing with these committees. Is that change, that fresh set of eyes, that new vision, man? We're fighting fire in a world today that's changed so much in not just 6 years, but in 1 or 2 years. And so we have to have that fresh vision all the time, I think. So.
Mr. Chair.
Commissioner Hill.
Well, I've served on two, trying to ramrod 427. How do we get more information about, I hate to say it, but I don't know a single solitary person on these three pages. And I've been given the charge to fill this and make this happen, to rewrite an entire division of our code. And, you know, talking to them or just feeling them out a little bit more, do we not have the ability to get phone numbers to even tell them for me to call them back and say, you didn't make the cut. You know, this is the reason I decided, you know, and that may not be my job, you know, but and even, you know, out of San Marcos, you know, and I look through here and on the applications that I received that were done online, I don't know these people. You know, I need to know more about and be able to discuss in a fire mode, you know, what this guy's about, you know, or girl or team or whatever, you know. There's just not enough because there's perfect people, but I only need three, you know. Well, I've got 17 here and I don't have the ability to go, you're out. You know, you might as well be flipping a coin. I'd like to have them all. I'd like to have every single one of them, but I don't have that ability. And no way to get a hold of
them. Well, and that's not true. The process used for this was the process that's been in place for years, whether flawed or however you want to see it. I could have handed you a document of 200 pages, and I think it would have overwhelmed you.
Oh, gotcha.
Instead, we just gave you a list of names. We have all of that. If you ask me for it, I'll hand it to you.
I didn't know whether it was available to you. Oh, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's all open record. We've got. It would help. We required everybody to email us, so we'd have all that information available for you.
Perfect.
I do want to point out the one positive I see in this Sunset Report and this particular recommendation, it truly opens the door. Whereas the current 419 somewhat stifles this agency to have a firefighter advisory committee that everything gets referred to. Removing that language from the law and directing the agency to create a rule about advisory committees opens that door. You don't have to have just one committee anymore. That language has been removed. You can have as many as you want on whatever topics you want. And everybody's talked all around that, but I just want to point that out. We've really been given an opportunity here to make this what we wanted. We can have as many committees, as many people on each one that we want because the language is recommended being removed from the law. That's a win. I think that's a huge success. And I didn't want this discussion to miss that piece. I know there's a lot of feelings all the way around on this. The goal here is to do better. That's what we want to do. And by them removing the defined committee and the makeup of it has really opened the door for a lot of opportunity for the Texas Fire Service.
Any other comments from the commissioners? I'm sorry, Chief DeYeer.
Good afternoon. My name is Daniel DeYeer. I'm a deputy chief at the Dallas Fire Department, and I serve y'all as the chairman of the Firefighter Advisory Committee. And first of all, to the newest members of the commission, I welcome you. I'm excited. This has been a great time to be involved with the Texas Commission on Fire Protection, so I congratulate all of you. I guess I'm the chairman or the presiding officer of this committee that's in question. You heard a few minutes ago from Jim Reedy, who is the longest serving member of that committee. And I'm the second longest serving member of that committee. I've been down here for 13 years now on that committee. I just became the presiding officer 11 months ago. I joined that committee with your chairman, Chief Steelman, back in 2008. And both Chief Steelman and I have been involved in the fire service with the Texas Commission since then. And he served on the advisory committee before he moved on to the commission, as well as many other members of our committee who moved on to the commission. I'm torn because I've heard a lot of things in the last year that seems to be negative when never in my 13 years have I seen a more positive impact and temperature of the organization. For example, I know there was a point there where there was a push that there wasn't enough representation from the top 25 fire departments in the state of Texas. And in reality, the three biggest fire departments in the state of Texas are already represented on the advisory committee. And many of them are represented on your committee. They're also represented on the curriculum and testing committee. What I've heard from everybody is what and how. We don't like the way it's made up, and here's how we should fix it. What I get frustrated is I have yet to really hear anybody tell me or explain to y'all or anybody, even themselves, as to why. Why are we making this change? And if you give me just a second to refer here, so the commission, y'all, It's as simple as can be. There's a mission statement on page one of the documents that y'all probably saw yesterday. If you're new, the rest of y'all should all be familiar with this. And it's as simple as this: to aid in the protection of lives and property of Texas citizens. That's it. There's no other responsibility that you're charged with. None whatsoever. When you get to our committee, the Firefighter Advisory Committee, I'm not sure of the genesis and what the discussions were on that initial day, but I'm aware that many of you on this commission right now, no insult intended, know absolutely nothing about the fire service. Nothing at all. You don't ride a fire truck tomorrow. You didn't ride one yesterday. You haven't been through the program. And that's not an insult. It's great that you're here. As a matter of fact, it's fantastic that you're here. We've had some great input from many of you sitting in this room here right now that you know how I respect you and how influential you've been in our industry. But at some point, y'all are, those of you that are newest members of this committee, you're looking around the room at other members of the committee and you already have them picked out as to who can I go talk to? I'm new here today. Let me go talk to this person. They've been here for a while. Let me go talk to the presiding officer. He's been around it for a while. What do you think about this? Because I don't know what a 45-minute SCBA is or what NFP 1851 really means to a firefighter on the line. And we can keep talking about semantics, but my committee has a specific charge, and I'll read it to you. We're responsible for reviewing and commenting on the administrative rules that govern the state's fire service. So I'll ask you this, how many of you, even those of you that are in the fire service sitting on this committee, how well-versed are you in understanding the rules that govern the fire service in the state of Texas? My committee's charged with that. Never once have I represented the Dallas Fire Department on that committee. I represent the state of Texas and the greater good of the fire service in the state of Texas. Sometimes that falls in line with Dallas, sometimes it doesn't. But my job is not to represent the Dallas Fire Department. If XYZ Fire Department got on the committee tomorrow, they're not going to be representing the XYZ Fire Department. I think that would be a detrimental to everybody in the fire service. They need to represent the greater good for the lives and property of the citizens of the state of Texas, which is your mission statement. So when we talk about the top 25 fire departments, right? Well, I don't know why we draw the line. Where's the metrics coming from? Where are the metrics coming from that we're discussing here? What, 6-year term? Has there been a feasibility study that says, yeah, after 5 years, 11 months and 30 days, all of a sudden you're worthless. We need to get somebody else to take your place. Commissioner Steelman, do you remember how many applicants we had for the Firefighter Advisory Committee when y'all started with your committee? Was it 72?
Something like that, yeah.
So we had 72 applicants for the Firefighter Advisory Committee here just a few months ago. I would propose if you got rid of all 9 of us tomorrow and appointed 9 people from that committee, there's still going to be a lot of people on that list who are going to be mad and want to know why I didn't get on that committee. So if it's good to have new blood and it's good to have change, perhaps we should replace all 9 of us every year. Just think about it. In 10 years, we'd have 90 new people serve on the committee. Maybe we should do the same with the commission. It doesn't make sense because somewhere there should be metrics as to what is right in the fire service. And this is not a typical business. I'll be honest with you. It took me 6 years of serving on this committee before I started to understand what those administrative rules are. The first year, I've got members on my committee right now. Pull it up. Y'all look up. You can go do it. 10 seconds on the internet and look at the minutes from the last several meetings. You'll see members of my committee that never make a motion, never second a motion. They're there. They're still learning. They're trying to figure out the process. And I'm also one of those people that should have the crosshairs on me because I serve on more than one committee. There is an arrangement that y'all have made as a commission that somebody from the Firefighter Advisory Committee serves on the Curriculum and Testing Committee as a liaison. That is me now. And that came by default. Jason Collier used to serve that role, and he finally threw his hands up one day and he said, I can't do this anymore. Who wants it? Nobody wanted it. I volunteered to do it. And I can tell you right now, if you all wish to remove me from that committee tomorrow, I will extend a heartfelt thank you to you right now. That committee spends 3 solid days, 8 hours a day, sitting in a boardroom right down this hallway here, going over job performance requirements, looking at specific test questions. And I've been on that committee now for several years. I can still tell you I am clueless on that committee. I have to defer to the members of that committee who have been on it for a very long period of time and understand curriculum, understand education better than I do. There's value in that. If we replace all those people tomorrow, I'll have no one to even turn to. So there should be some sort of a succession plan. We're all agreeing on that. But we can argue it to death as to what's the best plan. But somebody needs to look and ask the why. What are we trying to accomplish? Why? Is it going to make the fire service better? Perhaps it will. But that's a speculation. That's not a hard-held, here we have information that's empirical, and this is the reason we want to take that data and make a change. Nobody's doing that. No one has done that. And I can't even defend the Firefighters Association with the same metrics. We don't do that. I can tell you all right now, and I wish to remind you all, especially those of you who are new to the committee, you all right now today can choose to replace me on the Firefighter Advisory Committee. You have that authority and responsibility today. Not just me, everybody on that committee. I didn't get on the committee with a term. I got on the committee realizing I could be removed at any minute. And that still exists today. No one's taken that away from you. So as we move forward, please focus on the why. If somebody comes up here and says, if we know for sure, if we did this, if we replaced Chief DeYear after 13 years on that committee and put somebody on there, we will for sure have more knowledge. I'm all in it. I'll step aside in a heartbeat. That's not why I'm here. I can tell you, Commissioner Sharma, we have the Health and Wellness Committee. I know of at least three members that are on that committee. Never seen them. Don't even know who they are. They haven't been on the Zoom meeting. The last Zoom meeting we had five members of the committee there. Now, there were some excused absences, and I know I'll use him. Chief Boker wasn't on our last meeting, but you've done a tremendous amount of work on that committee, Chief, and we appreciate you. But we do know there's a few folks that are just on the committee. I don't know if they're building resumes or what they're trying to accomplish, but they're on the committee. So we're happy. There they are. No one's asking that question. Why? Why are you on the committee? But I sat in this room here a few months ago when you were all interviewing for the replacements of the firefighter vacancies. And you all asked the why. Why do you want to be on this committee? Why? What do you bring to that? I see nodding heads because you're all part of that. So I know it's difficult for you to weigh in when you hear people on one end of the spectrum and people on the opposite end of the spectrum. But stay focused to your mission, the why. Is it actually going to impact the fire service in a positive way? I have that same problem. The top 25 fire departments in the state of Texas, 11 of them are in my backyard. Matter of fact, Chief Greif spoke, I live in Plano. I work in Dallas. And 11 of those departments, I know many of them are sitting here in the room right now, they have my phone number in their phone. I have theirs in mine. They have my email. And just like any other governmental agency, you want to hear from people. And no one's coming up here and telling y'all, hey, I've really asked Chief DeYear to do this before, but he's not done it. I've asked the Firefighter Advisory Committee to do this, and they just won't do that. Nobody's saying that. And I'm here to tell you, I want that. I want them to call me. If I get up tomorrow morning and there's six emails in my inbox and there's people in the fire department that are saying, hey, would you think about this? Would you consider this? Would you move forward with this? Or would you ponder it? I'm all over that. I get crickets, nothing. I have in 13 years not ever received an email other than Chief Kistner, who is still here in the room, and he is tremendously involved in the fire service, and he voices his opinion like he did today. And I don't think I've ever ignored you once, Chief, when you and I have talked. I want to hear from you. You know I want to hear from you. And that's the way it should work. Questions, now that I threw that out here in front of you all. No questions, comments? You can vote to remove me.
I appreciate all of the help you have done. You've been a tremendous help as well with working on, you know, our committee as well, you know, the Health and Wellness Committee. Everyone on the committee has done a great job. And without the, you know, the strong support I've had from Chief Kistner, Chief DeYear, Boyker, Chief Muir, and, you know, Houston Fire Department, the union, and, you know, all of our departments that have helped, we wouldn't have, you know, the help to promote these initiatives for the health and wellness of all the firefighters. So it really does take, you know, the people to step forward and volunteer their time. So it's difficult to get that, you know, diligent support. So I do appreciate all that you do.
Well, if I could add to that, I'm thinking about it, I also serve on a third committee. I'm also a member of the Health and Wellness Committee. And that became, by default, because I was one of the initial members of the advisory committee who went to Commissioner Moore when he was still the chair, and we asked to create that committee. And I got placed on it. And the only benefit, it's not helping my resume. My next move in my career is a retirement party. That's it. But we have silos if we don't have any kind of transition between the committees. And what I bring to the Health and Wellness Committee is the fact that I understand how the Firefighter Advisory Committee operates. I don't think the entire committee should be the same committee. I agree with that wholeheartedly. But when we talk about people serving on multiple committees, I'm thinking everybody's pointing at me because I'm the only one I know of that serves on three committees. And the only reason I serve on the advisory committee is because I volunteered and joined 13 years ago. The only reason I'm on the curriculum and testing committee is I got appointed by default because no one else wanted it. If I could find somebody else to take my place tomorrow, I would be all over it. But the only option I have is people on the advisory committee to choose from that. And the only reason I serve on that committee is not to create your curriculum and your testing. I'm the liaison back to the advisory committee so that questions can be answered during the 3 8-hour days that we sit in that room that pertain to the actual administrative code that we're responsible for and being knowledgeable about. That's it. What else? I saw somebody in the shadow, so I guess there's a rebuttal here. So. None? Thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
All right, I'll approach the microphone. Leonard Chan, Houston Fire Department. First off, we would like to mention, in our interpretation of the government code chapter 2110 on advisory committees have precedence over all advisory committees and for all state agencies. So this is not just a TCFP item. That includes the automatic expiration dates for advisory committees, the compensation requirements, and also this provision that says that the statute mandates that an advisory committee must provide an imbalanced representation between the industry or occupation and two, consumers of services provided by the agency, industry, or occupation. So when we're saying we're looking for diversity of stakeholders, we're not just looking at firefighters from different ranks, firefighters from different cities, but we're looking more at the NFPA model. Jim Reedy and I serve on different NFPA committees. NFPA has different classifications of stakeholders. May it be firefighters, it might be enforcing authorities, it might be special experts, representatives from labor, representatives from insurance, and users. You also have, let's say, the Center for Public Safety Excellence. They have a wide diversity of stakeholders as well. City managers, county managers, labor, fire chiefs, standards industry, and the insurance industry. Just to clarify that on that, because we're not just asking for stakeholders on different size departments, but different classes of people affected by the fire service. So if you look on page 2 of the Houston Fire Department letter signed by Chief Pena, committee members that were suggesting for, let's say, fire prevention would include certified inspectors, labor organizations, head of departments, but also, this is a little more novel, commercial or industrial businesses, insurance, research institutions, and the people that we serve, which are the at-risk populations. And this is identified consistently by the NFPA or State Fire Marshal's Office, may it be like the elderly, child care providers, and so forth and so on. So that's just a clarification on our part. Thank you very much. Any questions? Thank you.
Commissioners, I heard my name being used. So I sit on the NFPA 1971 and 1851 committee for the Texas State Association of Firefighters. Mr. Chen and I are not on the same type of committee. That committee is involved in the construction and certification testing of bunker gear and the selection, care, and maintenance of bunker gear also. So that committee has people that make the gear, engineer the gear, manufacture the gear, fabrics. That's why that committee has those different kinds of people on the committee, because there's a big group of people, different industries that produce that committee. These firefighting committees here are representative of the people that are regulated by the commission. The paid firefighters in this state are regulated by this commission. The paid firefighters that do firefighting and arson and some fire prevention are regulated by the state. So the makeup of these committees If you want it to be reflective of what happens, it should be the people that actually do these jobs and the people that we regulate, not this wide, broad scale. We actually have the public members here to get that information that we vet for you and that we provide for you. But yeah, there's a little difference. So using the NFPA committees to sculpt this, it might be a little disingenuous. So thank you.
Commissioners.
I think we've heard enough that we probably need to study this a little bit more. It's not quite as simple as what's written in black and white on the paper. And I really suggest a move that we do what Commissioner Jones had recommended, which is a committee, a subcommittee on committees, so we can look at it further and then report back and at our next meeting. How that's made up will be obviously up to you.
I have a question about, so one of the issues is having someone that's already on the committee be on another committee. I would volunteer my time to look at this, if that's okay. Because I'm also on the health and wellness committee. So I volunteer myself.
Thank you.
I'll serve on the committee as well.
I'm happy to hear input maybe at this point at what that committee to study committees might look like.
Like I said before, I think you have people that represent all stakeholders on it. I mean, again,
numbers of, I mean,
members of Texas Fire Chiefs
Association. I'm saying numbers representing each one of those stakeholder groups. I mean, as we've seen with Commissioner Hamilton's group, sometimes it's hard to get certain cross sections to fit in those boxes. So this one may not be a problem at all. There's plenty of people out there that I'm sure are going to raise their hand willing to serve. So what should that committee look like?
As painful as it's going to be, I wouldn't recommend making it too small, because there's so many differences. I mean, just one example is the size of organizations you have that we regulate, the types of training institutes that we regulate. And so you don't want it too big, but at the same time, you don't want to limit it, because here we are, we're trying to involve everybody, and we're still not going to make everybody happy, but I think we got to try to bring everybody into it. So do you use the list in agenda item 7 of our stakeholder groups that get an opportunity at every meeting to address, and you approach them for 2 or 3 names from each one? I don't know. I mean, it's just one idea.
Yes, Commissioner Glenn.
Yeah, and I think the path we're going down would be the appropriate path. When the discussion started, I went back. Of course, we're in a legislative session, so we have that House Bill 1845, and April 7th, House Bill was left pending in committee. And SB 709 has passed the committee. The committee report has not been filed. It's not available online yet. But you know, it's headed to the Senate floor, or it's headed to count. It should be headed to
House floor.
Passed. So essentially, we're trying to make decisions. I guess where I'm going with it is we're trying to make decisions based upon where we think the legislature is going to end up. And for crying out loud, any legislative session can be contentious, and you can have changes at the last minute. So we don't know, while we do know what the recommendations from the Sunset Commission were, and while we do know what the bills filed looked like, we don't know what the bills that are going to pass by the Senate and pass by the House and ultimately go to the governor, which we know there's going to have to be a bill. I mean, we just don't see that not happening. But we don't know what that bill looks like when it goes to the governor's desk for a signature. So I think this gives us a chance to make some good decisions. That's right for our commission. That's right for our firefighters that are regulated by the commission. Also gives us a chance to take a step back, and you know, within a month away of the bills going, being passed out of both chambers. So it gives us a chance to step back and let that process play out and see what it's going to look like.
by our next meeting session to be over, we may have better what that looks like. So, you know, I think if you create a committee and do that now, what Commissioner Glenn said, you know, we could be spinning our wheels and they may have. So maybe it's something that we come back and look at after session's over and the bill passes.
I don't disagree with that. I mean, we've made some good progress today. We certainly heard from all different angles of this, and it's certainly something I think going forward, I think we all know we're going to be addressing. And just like Mr. Wisco said at the beginning of this, hey, this is a start, right? And we're not going to fix it today. We didn't get here overnight. We're not going to fix it in one or two meetings. It's going to take a little bit of time. And I think, in my opinion, I think it probably is prudent to wait and see what happens through the legislative session before we make any hard, fast decisions or rules about how this is going to move going forward.
Can I make one more comment real quick? And just in regard, I hear what Chief Kistner had made the comment about. I hear what you're saying, that people have reached out and stepped up. And I think there was another chief that might have made the same comment. I hate that that's the case. I don't know why that's the case, why someone doesn't get feedback. You know, I'm the type of person to make sure that when I get emails, voicemails, whatever it is, it's a reflection upon me as a leader if I don't respond. So that is something I think we as a commission need to make sure that if people are reaching out and whatever that process is, that we're getting feedback to them, even if it is to say thank you, but no thank you, or thank you, we don't have a spot. But to that point, just because people are reaching out doesn't mean that we have to make changes to the process. Just because we have a number of people wanting to be a part of progress, not everyone can be a part of at the forefront. They can, you know, sometimes be providing ideas behind the scenes. But we do need to make sure people are hearing from us and finding out why, you know, yes or no. So I appreciate what you're saying, Chief. I just don't think that we need to make decisions based upon the fact that people haven't heard back or that people want to reach out, be a part of it.
And I want to just make one comment off of that, and it ties back into something Chief Stevens said a while ago, and somebody else, I forgot who, but I have received, since being appointed to this position as the chair, I've received maybe two, if not three, phone calls just from Texas firefighters in general, expressing some dissatisfaction, discouragement about that lack of a process on our part to let them know a final result. Hey, you're on this committee or no, you're not. Thanks for applying, kind of a thing. So as part of this process, I certainly think that's something that needs to be kind of fleshed out when we develop whatever that process, procedure, policy is going to look like, to make it a little bit more formalized so that there's always, you get that feedback. And, you know, a lot of times people get, I agree with Les, they get discouraged and they're like, well, crap, I'm never going to hear anything. And then they just finally give up and go away. And that's not doing us any favors. So, no. So I just wanted to add that on there, kind of spin off of what you said. So yes, for item 21, at this point in time, I'll either entertain a motion or we'll make a decision to take no action. So
I'll say no action until July. So we see what,
so do we want to table it or take no action?
I say we just table it.
Okay, so you're putting that in the form of a motion?
I make a motion that we table until our July meeting to see what's coming from Capitol on the legislative session.
Okay.
A second.
I have a motion from Commissioner Jones to table, a second by Commissioner Law. Any other discussion?
Mr. Cook.
The only thing I would ask is, regardless of what the legislature comes down with, that we still start to look at this and address it, whether it's in law or not. I think it's important. We owe it to our constituents and the people that we're representing that we at least look at this and address the issues that you've brought up.
I fully agree with it. Thank you for making that comment. Any other discussion? All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? And to the audience, I appreciate everybody that took some time to wait around so long after lunch, come up and make your comments. Your messages are heard. So thank you all for being here and sticking with us through this, and keep coming to these meetings. We're going to continue to have this conversation. So I appreciate you all for being here today.
That takes us to item 22, matters from the executive director. A, decisions of executive director in contested cases and consent orders.
Commissioners, there were no contested cases since the last time we met.
That takes us to B, status regarding division functions, training, approval, and testing, test administered training approvals, record reviews, and online training audits. Do you want me to do this one at a time, Mr. Wisco?
You can just roll it all into one. It'll.
Okay. B is certification and professional development training applications, IFSEC seals issued, certifications issued, training facilities, curriculum development, library resource requests. C is compliance, biennial inspections, compliance officers training, issues involving regulated entities. D is information technology, public website design, FARM, and FIDO improvements. CAPPS, Central Accounting Payroll Personnel System, IT Security Policy, and Service Requests.
So not to rehash everything in the five pages that you have in this agenda item, which are reports from the different divisions of the agency, I do want to point out the unbelievable number of exams that are being delivered right now and new certifications that are being issued out. Just in the last quarter, 4,628 exams. And I have to remind you that we started that quarter with most of our online testing centers still shut down due to COVID. So these exams are being hand-delivered, printed out here, shipped to people, proctored by agency staff. We've pulled compliance officers over to proctor exams, taken them away from their compliance duties. So our testing and training group with the assistance of the other divisions they're all over this and we're making it happen. The compliance officers, they're doing their compliance inspections. They're helping out the other ones. We're seeing good feedback on the inspections. We're still finding issues, but we're able to work through it. One of the bigger issues is our IT department is working to transition us completely to the cloud. There's a bunch out there. I don't know which one it is, but apparently over the weekend they made a second attempt, had a couple of stumbling blocks, so they're back to the drawing board on that. But that's an ongoing process, and we're trying to accomplish that because at the end of the day, that helps us even expand more some of the things that we're able to do here. So the biggest driving force of this agency, not only are the people, but the technology. The technology costs money. I don't have to tell you all, you've seen our budget. There's not a lot of that. So we're working as hard and as fast as we can to accomplish all of this. But the more technology that we can get, the sooner we get to the cloud, the more we're going to be able to do. So I really just want to give credit to the staff. It's been a remarkable last 12 months, and the last quarter's been a lot of catching up and righting the ship, and they're doing a great job. I'm happy to answer any questions you might have about anything in particular you read in these five pages.
Commissioners, any questions on 22B? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. That puts us to item 23, personnel matters regarding the appointment, employment, compensation, evaluation, reassignment, and duties of the executive director.
Oh, here's why they spelled a different name on the card.
Anything on this one? All right.
That puts us to item 24, public comment.
We've had a good day of that.
There's no any, public left.
Any parting messages from those left? All right. Now, this is a great, great meeting, great turnout. I'm appreciative of everybody taking the time out of their day to show up and let us know what's on their mind. That's what makes this thing move forward. So I'm grateful for that. Okay.
Everybody's favorite item, 25, adjourned meeting.
Second. I do want to make a comment on this one before we do a final vote. I appreciate all the commissioners. So for you tenured commissioners, thank you for bearing with us today. For you new commissioners, just welcome aboard. This is the kind of things we do here. You certainly picked a good day to start. So we've got some work to do out in front of us, but it's all good work for the betterment of the Texas Fire Service. So thank you all for taking on this challenge, and I look forward to working with you going forward. So with that, I'll call for I got a motion by Commissioner Wilson, second by Commissioner Jones. Any other discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Meeting adjourned. Please turn off your microphone.